Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shkeli. Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Blood vs. Water. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to do a full cast assessment. We have so much content to do it this year. I feel like ever since the whole Shontent debacle, we get the full cast, so that's a good thing. Let's not jinx that. And then we also had bios, we have videos that just dropped on template, we have a ton of social media stalking. Like, we're not digging around for this stuff. We actually have a lot of content to get into. So I'm super excited to do that. And I have the best guest to do that with. It is my best friend, my co-host for Survivor South Africa. He is a writer for Parade. He podcasts on RHAP and post-show recaps all the time. It is the blood to my water, the great Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you for being here.
I'm so excited you brought in this comparison because A, I was going to think the exact same thing. And B, I do think we need to open this up with a lengthy discussion about who is the blood and who is the water in this relationship.
There's no discussion. I'm the blood, you're the water. It just sounded better to say the blood to my water.
I could not agree more, Shannon. We are so much in sync. Here's the thing. You are passionate. You have so much life within you. Not to say that I don't. But I think that much like water, I take on many forms. I think much like water, I am very ever flowing, just moving from different places to different things. And I often run my mouth much like a river. So I think water makes more sense and the passion of blood makes much more sense for you. Plus, you have such cutting words sometimes. And I think you're able to draw much more blood as well.
I feel like when I think of our friendship, a lot of it, like, firstly, it's me a lot like venting to you and you calming me down, like clear blood water. Like, it makes sense to me. Is everyone understanding what blood and water is?
At what point has water become known as like the ultimate cooling? I mean, I guess when you're on fire, you want to put out the water with the fire with the water.
Yes, like that is. What? Do you know what water is? I'm confused. At what point is water cooling? Like refreshing, calming, like the thing used to put out fires? Like, and blood is the big scary red thing, as is me. And I feel like in our relationship, it's like, I'm like, I'm going to say this thing and you're like holding me back. That's the blood water dynamic. And I'm glad that we've talked about this duality because so in our cast assessments, we do like, we usually say like, we think they're going to make the merge or not. And I said to you today, like I had an idea for something fun to do. Last time we did How Many Confessionals. Mm-hmm. This time, what I wanted to do, and it's topical, I think we should say if we think they're a blood or a water.
This, like, meaningless let's thing. Go BuzzFeed on this.
Yeah, like, so blood would be like, they're going to make big moves, they're out for blood, they're like an aggressive player, they're coming in hot. Water would be like tranquil, calm, paced. Isn't this what blood versus water is, or is this a duality that we've completely made up?
This is a duality that you have 100% made up. This does not exist in nature.
No.
First off, let's just talk about the fact that blood versus water as a concept, like back during Survivor 27, there was
sense.
A reason to laugh at the concept in many ways. Mm-hmm. I never forget the preseason for blood versus water when people said, this is it. This is how Survivor ends. This is the worst idea I've ever heard. And then lo and behold, look what happens. Low expectations are the key to happiness. But the phrase is, blood is thicker than water. These two liquids are not engaging in a contest against each other. That's not what the phrase entails. That would be like bird versus bush, you know, of let's just take two nouns in a phrase and put them against each other. You know, bed versus rise. If we're comparing two verbs, it makes absolutely no sense. And it elates me to no end that Australia has then taken that concept and run even further with it, Shannon. Because look, you say, are you a blood or are you a water? We sort of have that question answered for us because there's a tribe called blood and there's a tribe called water.
Well, I want to say I'm going to riff on the blood water tribe names so long past it being funny. Like they're going to have merged into the runny blood tribe.
No, they're not going to combine it. Like this is all purely inspired by what happened last season when they literally looked around and said, oh, I don't know, fire tribe. They're just like, oh, great. We don't need to try. Incredible. Blood versus water. Blood and water. I'm just really excited, Shannon, because I think we are maybe two seasons removed from the tribe where they just get the flag and they say, I don't want to paint anything. And so it's just going to say tribe day 24. We are honestly incredibly close to that. That is the doomsday clock when it comes to Survivor tribe names. And we are alarmingly close to midnight.
So many things. I mean, I think on a serious note, for me, I think they don't want to be insensitive to like indigenous cultures, but then it's kind of weird to do something else. I feel like they still could have done something that wasn't blood and water. It is the funniest thing of all time. Let's just get that out there. I also like, once we're here, so in the Survivor South Africa podcast, we try to like come up with progressive swap names so that we have a way to like delineate the original tribes.
So easy. You have new blood. New blood is right there.
I was going to go with bloodier.
Oh, and wetter. Okay, well, that's
bloodier and wetter. True.
Oh boy, well listen, you'll never stop me from calling a tribe wetter. Maybe we'll do new blood and wetter. Maybe that's just the Twilight fan in me that I wanted to call a tribe new blood. Maybe the Mirror tribe name could be Eclipse.
Why?
That's the name of a Twilight book.
I know what the names of the Twilight books are, but I don't understand what that has to do with this.
Why was a tribe called Fire?
Why were you at Blood and Water? I want to say, Mike, I miss podcasting with you, like, to my very soul.
It's been such a long time, not since you and I did, I believe it was our final deep dive of Survivor South Africa season 8 was the last time you and I podcast together. So it's been a hot second. It's been a watery second.
I think what we should do is we should replace the words blood and water whenever they like organically come up with each other. I don't know why. I don't know. Why are the tribes blood and water? I will be calling the swap tribes bloodier and wetter. I know new blood, that sounds good, but I've really been set on bloodier for a couple of days. There's a lot going on. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about a lot of different things. It looks like a fun cast. A lot of fans, if they're to be believed. A lot of content to analyze. Some truly unhinged social media things that I have uncovered that I can't wait to tell you about. Like, yeah, I found something a couple of hours ago while scrolling, and I thought, like, how am I going to get through the next 2 hours without telling Mike this? And then, like, you know, however long until we get to it on the podcast. I'm not going to say it now. I'm going to say when we get to the person. If you're listening to this and you haven't gotten to me talking about the thing, you'll know the thing. Don't stop listening. Even, I didn't get to it in time. Oh, no, the season started. I'm out. No, don't tap out. And I'm going to actually, I might do it towards the end because it's worth it. It's so good.
Wow. Okay, so you have really, like, dropped a big bomb, very Bachelor, right? Like, okay, by the end of the night, the biggest reveal in preseason Survivor AU history.
The most shocking reveal ever. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Exactly. Well, I mean, listen, we got to get into the Survivor AU marketing. I mean, let's talk about a couple things, though, before we get into the cast proper, because, yeah, I am truly, truly intrigued as to what we are about to get into on the 31st. Because first, there's the concept of blood versus water, which I don't know if this is a hot take or a watery take, if you will. Apparently they're polar opposites, according to you.
Heat and water are. But blood and water aren't.
Boil water. Heat can be involved with water as well.
Don't confuse me.
Have you never taken a shower?
No, that's not the idea of water. Don't confuse what water is. Don't say it's not hot water.
It does not constitute heat at all. It's cold water only.
Yeah.
Room temperature max. So
I forgot about hot water as a concept. I'm very tired, Mike. I'm very tired. Yeah.
So, hopefully there's hot water where you might be going. It sounds like you're going to prison. You're not going to prison. Maybe a survivor prison.
What?
With the experience. I don't know. Again, this is my river portion. I'm just running off at the mouth here. I think that blood versus water was when it was incepted into Survivor, blood versus water was one of the most psychologically interesting concepts that the show has ever seen. Specifically in the pre-merge. I do feel like in both seasons of Blood versus Water, when it came to the post-merge, it got pretty simple, right? Like the pairs that were left came back together and they didn't really turn on each other, save she voted out her mom. And even then is a little bit of an overblown situation. But the pre-merge is an incredibly interesting situation where you work with people either depending on or in contrast to who your loved one might be working on with the other side. And we saw that a lot in Survivor 27, right? When it was like, okay, we need to vote off this person in order to, you know, weaken the other side. Or, oh, no, this person voted off my loved one. Therefore, I'm going to take revenge on their loved one. I think particularly in the pre-merge, which this is a good advantage of Survivor AU's pre-merge being relatively long compared to other seasons. This is going to be something that I think is very inventive and I think will certainly breed a lot of emotional responses during a time when, to be candid, it's not particularly, may not be the most exciting. Sometimes it is the most exciting part of the season, but sometimes the pre-merge is usually just a ramp up to what's to come in the post-merge. I think this has a great job of really setting up some emotional stakes. You know, when JLP asked, want to know what you're playing for, essentially the externality of every challenge is like, you're competing to essentially see if you or your loved one is going to be on the chopping block. And I think due to the various relationships that we're going to see over the course of this season, I think there's going to be a lot of great inherent drama in the stakes behind every single challenge and every single vote. And we know that Australian Survivor, the Outback, they love stakes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I want to say as well, we already did a preview podcast on RHAP. I did one with Amy Chan, and we were talking through kind of like all the ways that this will kind of interact with Australian Survivor, which is so dramatic. And it's such an extreme personal, psychological, emotional theme. To put that against the like heightened drama of Survivor AU, that's going to be really interesting. I've been thinking about it in a lot of ways. We talked on that podcast about how that will kind of pertain to an extreme edit often and parts of that. But I think as well, like, so the challenges, if they're going up against each other in challenges, like, and when physical has been so imperative to Australian Survivor, there might become strategies in that. Like, if they're always going up against partners, you might need to like vote out someone who that kind of nullifies their loved one. So someone like, say, if you vote out Sam Gash, who was super, super strong in her own right. But if she's going up against her husband, Mark Wales, like that's like the strongest guy on that tribe. So if you take her out, are you like sitting him out of the challenge, basically, like by taking out his partner? I'm kind of interested in these parts of it because Australian Survivor is super, super physical, super, super extreme in editing and game style, already like the most dramatic of the franchises, the longest, mm-hmm. like it's just a lot. And then you put in the theme that's probably the most, like the most theme, like the most different theme. That feels like that season's going to be like very extreme.
Yeah. So when it comes to the cast, I'm really intrigued by them. Obviously, when it came to the first ever Blood versus Water, obviously it was half returnees and then half loved ones. And even in some capacity, like, you know, your Brad Culpeppers, your Haydens, there were still some relatively known personalities. And not to say that there isn't, but man, what a fantastically weird mishmash of a cast, which makes me really excited.
It's even weirder than you think. I'm telling you, there's so many things. Anyway,
I know that some people were like, okay, why are there these only odd returnees? Like, why didn't they do half and half? Honestly, I like it better this way. I mean, again, my water or blood take is that I really needed Mark and Sam to come back together. And in a usual blood versus water format, I don't think we would be able to do that because either you bring them both back and a loved one each, or only one of them gets to come back. You know, I also come from a weird reality TV world where like on RuPaul's Drag Race and Top Chef, they'll just bring back one returning player and just put them in the cast for no particular reason. By the way, Shannon, you should know, actually, in the most recent season of RuPaul's Drag Race, they have instituted the urn twist. The save scroll is in RuPaul's Drag Race this season.
Why? Why would you bring this up so early into our coverage of the season? We're trying to start fresh, Mike. Is that never talking about it again? Like, we're trying to forget the past, well, the bad parts.
That leads into another point, though, that I want to bring up, because let's talk about the direction of the show. Now, I remember when you and I and Nick got together, we had sort of said, yeah, you know what? That was a fun season. That was a weird season. A lot of questionable decisions on behalf of production. But I think we sort of espoused this is what Australian Survivor is going to look like for better or for worse. Now that you've gotten a bit further away from season 6 and moving towards season 7, do you still feel like that's the case? Do you feel like we should sort of gird our loins for basically a twist every week like we did in season 6? Or do you think they're going to now sort of steel themselves, these new showrunners, to be like, okay, now we get a better balance as to what things should be?
I feel like there'll be twists. I mean, the cast to me definitely endorses that there will be twists because the cast is full of twists. Like, Sandra's there. That's a twist. Like, that in itself is a twist. Like, there's these random few returnees. Like, that's quite twisty. The theme is a twist. Like, but they won't just end it there. So I do think that this is the... It wasn't just Brains versus Brawn. This has been building up for several seasons, and All Stars, like, once they started doing, like, non-elims that didn't save a round, like, at the time where Phoebe and Lydia were making fire, and you were like, oh, well, now right. this is a non-elim, but it's not for, like, a purpose. Like, you just want to kind of do this weird twist. That, to me, that was the glass-shattering moment that was underrated at the time where everything changed, and it became about the twist rather than the purpose of needing non-elims for the content. And I think it's been on that road ever since, and I think it will continue to be on it. So I think it would be kind of foolish to be like, yeah, I think that they're probably going to leave it at blood versus water and then just let that play out. Like, if you think that's the case, and there's a lot of people probably who haven't watched a lot of Australian Survivor or have just gotten into it on Paramount Plus who maybe are listening to this because, like, now there's a whole Paramount Plus push, and then there's Sandra and everything, and they don't really know what Australian Survivor is about. I'm going to tell you now, there's a lot of twists. Like, it's a lot. Yeah. So let me give
and
you
and
a warning.
And if I may put out a plug before I provide you with a heap of plugs at the end. I did happen to, before we recorded this podcast, tweet out a, what I think, pretty helpful primer on my Twitter at a Mike Bloom type, which is a big old guide as to basically everything you need to know about Australian Survivor, from the number of contestants to episodes to, like you said, the advent of non-elimination episodes and twists. Because I totally agree. I do think there is going to be a larger trickle in of especially international viewers compared to previous seasons, because not only the advent of 3 and now 6 previous seasons on Paramount Plus as of December, the fact that an American player is playing who is not universally reviled in Sandra. We should also mention here, though, also at the top, I mean, at least the question I have received the most as a Survivor professional is,
Survivor professional,
will the season be, I guess that's the way we could call ourselves.
Oh, no, that's
right?
What we are, but I don't know that we should give it a name. Anyway, it's definitely accurate.
The question I received as myself, is that a better way to put it, as water?
No, I'm already putting it in my bio with Survivor Professionals.
I love it. Let's let's monogram it, put it on our desk plates. It'll match in so many ways. We can bedazzle it even. But the question I've received in response to, like, every time I've tweeted something about Australian Survivor is, will this be available in the United States? And there are clues, but I will say at this point, I am hedging my bets and just giving a big old, I think there has been stuff said by JLP, by Sandra, but to be frank, I'm just waiting for the actual network to say anything. Because I know that also raises questions as to, like, okay, in the US, are we getting it at the same time? Because it airs in the Monday mornings for us our Sunday morning is your Sunday night. And so do we get episodes then? Do we get it the day after? Do we get it the week after? There has been very little information outside of, again, these, like, sparse reveals from the host and from one of the contestants. So I'd like to say it'd be great to watch on Paramount Plus, but I don't think any of us, and I'm sure you've been asked like 10 times, probably more than I have. And I don't know if you have any more information concerning you're closer to the network. I know bupkis about whether or not we'd actually be able to watch it relatively close to when it releases on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, I don't know anything. I feel like the Paramount Plus gate is the Shontent of 2022 in that we know nothing. Everyone really, really wants to know a lot. And JLP went rogue because all we have is that, well, JLP keeps saying it's on Paramount Plus, but there's Paramount Plus in Australia. So that actually doesn't mean anything about the US. But then JLP responded to a tweet that got screenshotted, like, saying it would be on US Paramount Plus. But then that tweet got deleted. I'm sure the network loved that. And then Sandra tweeted saying it would be in the US, probably taking from JLP's lead. But then she was quote tweeting now because the reply was gone. Just a tweet where he mentioned Paramount Plus, which again could just be Australian. So as you see, while we didn't have to go digging with the contestants and they gave us a ton of content, very happy with that. I guess the mystery has been around this part of it. So yeah, difficult one for international viewers. RHAP patrons will be okay, I will say on that. And that's kind of where I would point people if we don't know, if we don't get it. But yeah, I don't know. And people really want to watch because it's Sandra, but it's not just Sandra. It's like the evolution of Sandra and Nina, who hopefully, you know, like if everything goes well, Nina should become like a staple of US Survivor. Like the dynasty should continue. So I feel like it's a really integral part to global Survivor. People want to watch. The seasons are now, the Australian seasons are all the modern international seasons are all on Paramount Plus. People have been discovering it. Like this is really the time. So I think if they were smart, they would do it. I don't know if that would be day of, week of, after the season, but my fingers are crossed. I don't know anything. Like as someone who works for Channel 10 as a Survivor professional, like I have nothing. Yes. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's the blanket statement right now. Now, for all we know, again, knowing Channel 10, They might spring this information on the Survivor community the day before. They might even say just like, hey, the episode's over. Go check it out now on Paramount Plus. And we're like, oh, yeah, I guess it's there. They might surprise us in that regard. I mean, listen, if you haven't gotten your fix of just pure internet pandemonium from all the drama surrounding the Celebrity Big Brother 3 cast the past couple of weeks, just, you know, tune into the drama that Shannon was talking about. The internet has been a fire. Then hopefully we are the water to help put it out.
No, they've been blood. Stop making fire and water a duality. Blood and water is the thing.
Apparently, yeah. Well, do you think it's because they were like, oh, we want to do fire versus water, but they already used fire, so now I guess we have to go with blood again?
No, I think that they took blood versus water from the US version of the show.
Yeah, do you know if, well, obviously, but do you think Jeff Probst has like found out that, because Jeff Probst actually is not tapped into the vein using a blood metaphor into a lot of international stuff. Do you think he's aware that they've been using the themes from US seasons the past couple times?
Jeff Probst is like, there's an Australian version of the show. Good for you. Now, I think he knows about Australia. He's probably like, there's a South African version of the show.
Yeah.
Now, he knows that. I know that he does, because there are South African people who work on the show, and he signed a hat for me like through one of the camera guys once. But I don't think that Jeff Probst is like spending his free time digging into the international versions. Or maybe he just discovered them on Paramount Plus. I love the idea that Jeff Probst has been binging Australian Survivor on Paramount Plus, although... Oh, God.
No,
actually,
no,
you know, the more I thought of it, it just took me 1 second.
Avoid season six. Avoid season six.
Not a limbs galore. Yeah. You know what? Maybe he should stay away. Has he checked out Survivor South Africa? I think he could probably learn a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe that's the place to go. And we should also mention, like Shannon said at the top here, all six previous Australian Survivor seasons are available. If you need to watch before the series, this new season starts, maybe 2 and 4. Is a good place to start. And we should also mention, actually, while we're going through the cast too, full spoilers, I think, for Australian Survivor seasons 2 and 4, at least as it applies to the returning players.
But this is an Australian Survivor podcast. There is assumed knowledge.
Yeah, I know. But again, if we're having some looky-loos wandering, be like, what's this about? What's going on with Australian Survivor? Just know that in these people returning, we're going to spoil their seasons. I think it's safe to say that's for Sandra as well, but just fair warning. But I would say overall...
No, okay, those people tapped out like 20 minutes ago at the blood water thing. They don't know us. They didn't get past that. So we're good.
Or they really like the blood water thing, in which case, like, okay, I'm intrigued now. I'm intrigued by this casual fan who's really into blood talk.
I came in wanting Survivor stuff, but I got blood instead. I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, do you think vampires are going to look at the title and like come in droves to watch this? It does come on at night, so they are a captive audience.
Are you binging Twilight right now? What is happening?
That blood is in the air.
How have you mentioned vampires twice in 20 minutes of an Australian Survivor podcast?
When blood is a part of it, vampires can't be far away. I'm sure they're going to make a vampire reference in a season called Blood versus Water.
I bet on it. Let's do it right
okay.
now. What are you betting?
All right, we'll do it right now. What am I betting? My shoes.
What? I don't want your shoes.
I will send you a pair of my shoes if they don't say vampire.
I don't want you to send me your shoes. Okay, how about if they don't do it, you don't send me your shoes.
Okay, and if they do, I do send you my shoes. They're very nice shoes.
It's a punishment. Yeah, all right. No, there's not going to be a vampire reference. I don't know where your mind goes. It's like
there's so many. Exactly. There are so many nicknames that are put on Australian Survivor. You got to tell me there's not going to be someone being like, call me Vlad the Impaler. I'm a vampire, baby, and tonight I'm sucking blood.
No, there's not going to be that, Mike. Let's put shoes on it. I'll see your shoes, and I'll raise you shoes.
Okay, you send me shoes, then we'll do a shoe exchange.
I'm moving. I just threw out like 10 pairs of old shoes. I don't have any shoes to send.
If only we made this bet 2 days ago.
Yeah, then I would have like a bag full of old shoes to send you. Look. I don't know how we got here, but I know that one casual blood fan just tapped out on the shoe talk. Bye-bye, sir. Look, should we get to the cast? Like, should we talk
about
you have more?
Let's talk about this cast. No, I mean, I'm sure more weird stuff is going to come up as it usually does with this cast. I really enjoyed this cast. I think what has come out after the fact with season six is as lovably wackadoo a cast as it was sort of accidental kismet in many ways that I think due to a lot of restrictions around filming and quarantines, like they pulled a lot of people from the area. I think obviously at the time that this is filmed, the world had seemed like a bit of a different place. So I'd imagine that those restrictions are a bit loosened considering that they flew 2 people from the United States in. But it does seem like compared to season 6 specifically, because that's the one I'm really comparing it to, considering that, again, new showrunners. This really does seem like, you know, drink a shot of blood every time you hear someone say, I'm a massive fan of the game. Mm. It does seem like at least one person in a pair is the fan, and whether they sort of brought someone along in a sidecar or like they have a fellow fan, seems like a really interesting group because we're not getting as many celebrities involved, right? This is the first season in a long time to not have a tribe dedicated to physicality, whether it be champions, which included pro athletes, or the Brawn tribe. So I think it does feel like more of a mixture of just regular people and some civilian jobs. And again, there are some pseudo celebs thrown in there as well. It wouldn't be Australian Survivor without it. But I will also mention the diversity, not only in occupation, is great too. Not to say that it's the end all be all, but I do think after some really eye-opening, enlightening, and necessary conversations during this past season, Survivor 41, about, you know, the necessity of watching diverse stories on television, you could look at a Survivor, Australian Survivor cast in previous seasons and be like, this is comparable to, you know, comparing shades of paint to deck a doctor's office in. It's a lot of white. And so I do just like looking at the cast overall. There's a lot of diversity represented there. And by proxy, I think that's going to lead to a lot of different stories. There's going to lead to hopefully a more diverse audience being brought in, thinking that there's going to be more representation as well. So I'm happy that Australian Survivor has taken a couple of steps in some really, you know, decisive directions with this cast.
I think they could still go further with it. I don't think we're at like the 50-50 initiative that other franchises have committed to, but, you know, I guess it is going in the right direction. But it is an interesting cast. In terms of like diversity, there's like, again, quite a few fans. There's not as many personal trainers. That's the diversity I'm looking for, that half the tribe, half the cast aren't personal trainers. We do have a couple. But last season, it felt like they kind of just went to gyms and started handing out sign-up sheets. So that's a good thing as well. I think as well, we need to look at, for the videos which just dropped on Template, I think what we're really getting is kind of this duality. I felt like often it was like, he's the physical to my social. Yeah. And that's like how we're going to get those narratives. Even the people that said they were the same, it was kind of like, this is how they're going to be different to me. And this is like the parts of the game that we'll both kind of have our expertise in. So I think that's a really big part of it. But yeah, I feel like there are some good narratives there. And it does seem like a good cast on first watch.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it'll be necessarily the hot mess that season six was. Nor do I want it to be. I want that season to be a unicorn in many ways and all its appreciation. So if this ends up being more of a savvy cast, I mean, also take a shot of blood every time someone said strategic social game.
You're shooting blood.
That one reward challenge from Survivor Africa, okay? When I think blood, that in Survivor, that's the first thing that comes to mind for me.
And did they mention vampires in that episode?
They might have, actually.
I don't think that they did. Anyway, another thing I want to talk about is that I think in the videos, I think it's Chrissy who mentions 47 days, which lines up with Wikipedia on the filming schedule. That's a tight turnaround. I know that it doesn't sound like it because it's still so long, especially compared to US Survivor now, but it's 24 episodes in 47 days. So you got to think about, like, it will be quite stretched. And I know that in my interview with JLP last season, he talked about 48 days being just like a hectic filming schedule. So 47 days, I think we should, you know, pay attention to that as well.
Yeah, all right. So one less day on Redemption Sand or whatever they decide to call it this time. It's interesting. Why do you think that was? Obviously, when it came to the whole 26-day thing for Survivor US, it was this idea of like adding in a 14-day quarantine period. Did they just like, was their lease on the land up a day earlier than usual? And so they had to wrap it up in 47 instead of 48?
I don't know. Maybe they just mapped out the season and didn't need like that extra day. So they're like, let's just call it. But yeah, that's a bit of a difference. We talked through with Amy on the previous show, like some of the differences in location and stuff like that. I do, you know, encourage everyone to check that out. If you've not listened to it, maybe go back to it. Obviously, because there's a lot of like preview stuff before we got the whole cast. But in talking about the cast, I think we will talk about the six pairs that we knew about then and go through that. And then get to the 12 or really 13 new people. So I want to start with Sandra because I feel like that's what everyone wants us to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the Sandra talk? Stop talking about stupid vampires and talk about Sandra.
Yeah, but also stop talking about vampires in general. Stop talking about vampires and talk about anything else.
Oh, yeah. Wait, could Sandra become Vampdra? Could she turn from the queen into the vampire queen this season?
To the queen of blood.
Oh, I don't know.
Because I think she's on the blood tribe.
She is on the blood tribe. It is interesting. And we also got the tribe divisions, which I think we'll talk about a little bit at the end as well. So yeah, Sandra's playing freaking Australian Survivor.
Man, it's random.
Wild. You and Amy talked about how it really did seem like a big fanfare for her to essentially give a middle finger to the edge of extinction and be like, I'm dud. But I mean, you know, sometimes things might be insensitive.
It's like John Farnham. He had a lot of like goodbye tours, but he was never really done. That's like Sandra.
Yeah, or like the Rolling Stones would be another good comparison, right? We're like, how many times have they done a farewell tour? But they keep on a rocking. And that's what happens with Sandra here. Though I do wonder if the blood versus water concept was really the thing that hooked her, right? Because I can't remember. She may have been in talks to do it in season 27 as well with Nina. Though at that point, I think Nina would have been very young. Maybe her older daughter would have come on. But here she is in, I would say, a different light with Nina. But I do wonder if the separation will still allow Sandra to be Sandra without necessarily needing to worry now about like looking over her daughter 24/7.
Well, it's interesting that you mention her older daughter, because so we have these videos. Everyone check that out on Template. There's like 1 to 2 minute videos on everyone, which I think gives a lot of context. Because just like spending like a minute with someone, you're like, I think you could do well or not. So there's a lot there. Sandra jokes about Nina being her favorite. So maybe it's better that she didn't get to be there on Blood versus Water with her older, unnamed daughter who doesn't get that special attention. And then she's like, I can't joke about it. Like her older daughter would be really mad.
There's Nina and there's No-No, as in no way am I signing the release to allow you to say my name on TV.
Yeah, I'm interested in Xander's older daughter. You come too. We'll take the whole family. We're so happy to have the Twines here.
Did you not say that like both her daughters came with her to Australia to play? So like, is this other one just hanging out there for 47 days?
I hope one of you goes pre-merge so that I can hang out with you. No, I mean, she could have, you know, there are multiple flights, Mike. There's a whole air travel industry. So I don't know if she came later, but they seem to have traveled around Australia, like really like had some fun with it. Sandra in her video says she's a better player when she plays from the bottom, which is what she plans to do here. She'll have to, I think, being Sandra. But like somehow I believe she'll pull it off. I don't know how or why, but when she says that, I'm like, you will do that. You will play for the bottom and you'll win, Sandra. I don't know why I think that.
Well, because she does it time and time again, right? She came into Game Changers and we're like, okay, she's one of the first people out. And it really did seem like she got swap screwed. Seemed like she would have at least made the merge, was in a very comfortable position. Winners at War, she essentially idles herself out of the game. Again, probably would have been guaranteed to make the merge.
She wasn't voted out by a majority. And she was swap screwed and then not voted out by a majority. So she's never just been like, oh, we all don't like you, or we all find you too threatening after spending like a lot of time with you. Like, that's not the standard game. That's never happened to her.
Yeah, so she almost is like Suri to that point, where I think neither one of them, for odd reasons, have just never faced this very simple idea of you got the most votes, therefore you are voted out of the tribe.
Game changes, but it was a swap. It was unfortunate.
But it was an inordinate circumstance, I would say. It was kind of weird for Sandra to be like, all right, my plan is to purposely be on the outside of the major alliance and then work my way up. But again, to be good at Survivor is to know yourself, and that's how Sandra knows. Sandra's a hustler, I think, at the end of the day. And I think there is a difference
We're blood.
Oh, well, listen, just wait.
She's a blood.
She's just waiting until, blood hustler. That could be a thing.
Can it? What is, I forgot. Like, you just say things. I don't know what you mean.
There are people who sell organs on the black market.
Why? What? Like, yes, again, I know, but I don't know what it has to do with this.
Everything. It has everything to do with this. Sandra is going to be selling people's organs. Left and right. So
he's a blood hustler. He's an organ seller. Classic organ seller Sandra.
That's her. OSS. Yeah. So I think OSSDT. I think that when she comes in, I think there is a bit of a label for people of like, oh, super physical Australian Survivor. She's going to be countered out quickly. I do think that last season, maybe we didn't take a step back, but I do think we varied up the challenges a bit, where there were a bit of one-on-one battles. I don't know if that was due to the brain versus brawn theming, but I did find there was a lot more like even mix than especially All-Stars, where it felt like every single reward challenge was a one-on-one physical matchup. And considering that Sandra's, you know, pretty darn good at puzzles, especially given her experience, I think she could be in the way position of like, yeah, you might be literally dead weight in some portions, but like, there's actually some stuff that you're really good at. She said she's a good swimmer. Of course, we remember that infamous fight with Johnny Fairplay where she insists that she beat his ass back to the beach on the very first day. So I actually have maybe not high hopes. I have middle hopes for Sandra.
Organ seller Sandra, yeah.
For organ seller Sandra.
Call her by her name, yeah.
She'll make middle dollar. Because I think she'll make the merge. I could see a time where like she might get targeted early on, but I honestly do think when people meet Sandra, when people talk with Sandra, I got to talk with Sandra. I visited her freaking statue camp on the Island of the Idols, and I fell in love with her. She's my favorite winner of all time from a character perspective. There is something about her. And I do think her tribe members will experience that as well. And I think she'll do what she does best and ingratiate herself into at least getting those first few votes. And we know what she says, as long as it ain't me. And then once she gets into a swap position, like,
she'll go home, as she had in the two most recent seasons that she played.
I mean, that does beg the question, though. Sandra has never sat on a Survivor jury before. Part of me kind of doesn't want to break that streak. Like, it feels almost too perfect. It almost feels too crystalline. Do I really want to break that amber and, like, have her be a jury member? Or do we want to continue to maintain this record of, for whatever reason, she's never actually going to ask a question at Final Tribal Council?
No, I'd love to see her as a jury member if she's not winning. Like, that would be so fun. I feel like she'd be such a great juror. I, too, am in love with Sandra. I want to say that. And I'm so jealous that you went out to see her statue. I just feel like, I think people will love her, and if there are fans, then I think that they'll, like, hopefully all be like, oh my god, and not like, I'm a huge fan, and then who is that? When I said huge fan, I meant I watched Australian Survivor. That will kill me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can imagine a scenario where they all love her, and they all want to be around her, and this is so cool, but we're just, like, losing at the challenges, maybe, or she just can't, like, from a challenge perspective, we can't afford to have her. I could see that. It would pain me. But I think socially she'll get it done. She says, it's, you know, her strength is her social game. She has so many Survivor friends. And she says she wants to lose to Nina, as she taught her everything she knows. So maybe she wants to sit on a jury and campaign for Nina. Maybe that would be the best of both worlds, because I would love to see her on a jury if that's going to happen. But I think I'm hopeful, I guess, in the way that one must be optimistic. I want her to outlast Russell, because everyone does, because we need it as a community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know that I can say that I think that she'll make the merge.
I think she might barely make it. I could honestly see a situation happen that's very comparable to one of her fellow Survivor players, Survivor contestants this season, where they hit the merge. And usually at the merge, it's like, okay, let's all gang up on this one person because it's an easy vote. And it could be a thing where everyone's like, Sandra's way too dangerous. How do we let her get this far? Let's vote her out. I mean, to your point about the challenge thing, I think a natural argument against that is Sandra being like, do you realize how many challenges I've either played in or watched from a bench? Like, I know this much more than you do.
Yeah, and I know that I'm bad at it. That's the point.
Yeah, but it's almost equivalent to, like, you know, keeping around a coach or an Aussie in South Pacific or Boston Rob in Redemption Island. Like, experience has its merits. And I think this is not exactly that scenario, but I think Sandra is able to make that argument that certainly what one other person on her tribe can argue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do think, and Anna spoke about it on Talking Tribal, kind of like the fact that returnees in hybrid seasons do really well, that experience factor, hopefully that hero worship factor for someone like Sandra being like a leader type that people look to. I think there is that. The physicality worries me. And also, I mean, she is also a threat. So I'm going to say pre-merge, but I obviously hope to be wrong. I also think Sandra is obviously a blood.
Yes, absolutely.
She's fiery. Are we just thinking fiery. Blood is fire? I don't know.
I mean, in this game, fire represents your blood. When it goes out, your blood is gone. Then the vampires come to get you.
When it goes out, the vampires have descended.
Because then it's dark, and that's when the vampires feast.
Are you recording this from 2008? Like, I just don't understand your vampire obsession.
Yes, I'm so obsessed with this. Like, what is Wi-Fi? Is that what I'm recording on?
We're talking about Stuart went on to be Diana. A lot
We're
happened.
Talking about 2008, right? I can't wait for Survivor 16. It's going to be a weird season, but I'm sure the fans are going to do real well.
Robert Pattinson is Batman now.
What? I thought it was Christian Bale.
Yeah, I know. Welcome to 2022. But okay, so you're saying post-merge.
I'm going to say post-merge barely for Sandra.
Okay. And you think she's the blood. That's then the most important thing. That would make this like clear distinction of these people.
All right, well, let's talk about, should we talk about Nina
yes.
as well? Because I really encourage people to watch the videos for many reasons, but one is to hear Nina, because I never think about genetic traits translating in the voice,
mm-hmm.
but man, Nina sounds just like a mini Sandra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I really enjoy Nina because I feel like she's a mini Sandra. And as I said, I'm in love with Sandra. She's very much like, it's my turn now. She said she'd blindside her mom, which would be, I mean, to do that to the queen, like to be the queen slayer and to vote out her mom. Like those are already like two really big moments in Survivor history. Yeah, combine them. Explosion.
Sierra and Denise would have to both give over their crowns and they have to like melt it into one. It's like the opposite of Mean Girls. So yeah, Nina is, I love, by the way, I'm obsessed with the, so they do these graphics on the Survivor AU social media, right? Of like, brother and sister-in-law. And then for Sandra and Nina, it was Queen of Survivor and Accounts Clerk. Mm-hmm. Like talk about the blood versus the water in that regard. If Sandra now has no role, she is just now royalty, and Nina is simply accounts clerk.
Well, that's Sandra's job. Like, she says Survivor is how she gets her money. She's not just Survivor player. Like, she is the queen of Survivor. She was correctly labeled.
So that being said,
they could have said Survivor royalty, I guess. But much
yeah, but I think they really like to personify the royalty when it comes to Survivor. That'll be confusing as well. People are like, we just had a queen in Haley. Why are we getting a new one in Sandra? Did Haley die? Did I miss the whole transfer of power? Jesus. What happened? So Nina, I really actually am excited for Nina because I do think that there are certain traits that run in the blood, though I guess she is water by comparison, that she is able to carry through with a bit more of the youth and less of a reputation than
and
Sandra.
The physicality, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, she's younger. She is considerably younger. I think there's a couple of shots of her being athletic as well. She talks about like loving the competition. The thing she's most excited about are the challenges, and which Sandra's like, what are you doing in my family? Well, how dare you say that at the dinner table? Mm-hmm. But she's
I can't believe that I would burst someone who loves the challenges. It's just like you try so hard with your kids, but you only have so much control. And she says she's so keen on the challenges. Like, I don't even know who you are, Nina.
I have no daughter. Come here. No. You're my only daughter now. So she does have some interesting statements to make. She says her strategy is to be adaptive and not glowing. And she doesn't want a solid alliance. Which I find interesting because Sandra's MO is, yes, it's as long as it's not me, but she does pick like two or three people and is fiercely loyal to them, whether it be a Krista, whether it be a Courtney, whether it be someone like Michaela. Like she has her ride or dies. And I do wonder if Nina might be missing the point there in that regard of how, yes, you want to remain, if we're using a water analogy, like relatively open when it comes to swimming. Survivor is an ocean in that regard, but I think you also want something to kind of like something to keep in your sights, right? Because otherwise you're going to be lost. You kind of need an anchor at that point, sort of like George had a Kara, you know, Haley had a Baden for a certain amount of time. You want that one person to check into, and so I do hope that Nina at least sees that. Now, that being said, something that I offered while we were going through this exercise before coming onto the podcast is I think we should talk about, of the pair, which person is going to outlast the other person. I'm sure this is going to translate into how you think Nina is going to do, but I do think whether she slays her or not, I think Nina is going to outlast her mom in the game.
Yeah, I think this one's really clear for me because I am really scared about how it's going to go for Sandra. Like, I just see so many ticks that Nina has that Sandra doesn't. Like, Sandra has the experience, but hopefully has taught Nina a lot. Like, she's grown up with it. Hopefully she's passed on that knowledge. And then Nina doesn't have the threat level. She does have the physicality, hopefully, or is more physical, is 20-something years younger. I think that she can bring kind of the secret smarts that Sandra did in 2003, and then again in 2010, because I guess people have forgotten, without just the reputation that Sandra has. So for me, I would say post-merge, I do think that she's going to go further. I also think on the, like, alliance thing, people just say things before the season. Yeah, you know, like, then you get out there and you, like, make friends with people and you're like, oh, no, I will have an alliance. Like, I don't know. It just sounds like a question that she answered. It's not based on anything.
Thank you for boiling down the entire preseason experience into one buttery, perfect sentence. People just say things. That's really the Survivor preseason in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't need an alliance. Like, yeah, you will. You'll meet people and then they'll be your alliance. That's what Survivor is. Like, get into the game. But I think I really feel hopeful about Nina. I do. I really do.
Yeah, I'm very excited for her. Like, there might be, you know, a lot of Survivor magic in the Diaz Twine household. So I'm really excited to see Nina play. Maybe not that I'm not excited to see Sandra play, but one of the exciting things about Blood versus Water was getting to see sort of like the people behind the people, sort of like what Jeff Probst does in his languid loved ones talks, right? Of like, what was it like to be the dad to this daughter right now? I kind of like seeing, you know, what was it like to grow up in a household with Sandra Diaz Twine?
Oh my God, what an incredible childhood that she's had. I also think if she does well and she's awesome, like how cool for Australian Survivor and for Australia as a country to have been the place where that happened. Like how cool for that to be something we have in global Survivor history where it's like, oh, if you're not watching Australian Survivor, you haven't even seen Princess Nina slay. Like I would love that. It would make Australian Survivor like even more essential because you're going to miss a season of Sandra. I mean, if she does epically, then... I mean, yeah, people really need to add that to their Survivor knowledge. Like, that's a really big part of the puzzle. But, like, if you don't even know Nina and she tends to be epic and awesome, like, we did that. And it makes Australian Survivor even more essential. So I'm really, really hopeful for her. I will say I think she's a blood. I think it's that, like, Sandra Sass and Stuart passed on, and I doubt that she could, that Sandra could birth a water. She could have a water birth, but I don't think she could birth a water.
Her water will break. this is back to the question, though. When Russell played, he levied some suppositions that perhaps the reason why he was voted out so early was because of his nationality. Do you sense something like that here? To be frank, would Australians let an American win Australian Survivor?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we hate Americans. I think we hated Russell. Like, but I think it's hard for Russell to know that. So he's like, oh, for some reason they didn't like me. It must be because I'm American. I was like, oh, that actually wasn't the problem. I think there is that external thing. I think there is an outsider element to it. But I think if you're Sandra level social and so cool and people like you and Nina has parts of that, then I think that you could get past it. I'm not saying it's not a hurdle, but I think that like hopefully in the Diaz Twine household, there is that social charm that maybe some other Americans lacked in that regard.
Or just put on an accent.
People will hate that. That's how you'll get voted out. If they come, they're like, oi there, mates. Then they're out.
Yeah.
Then they're gone. That's the one thing.
Blokes and Sheilas of the jury.
They just like take one look at them and then they just get kicked right out of Australia. So I would say that they're going to do, I hope Nina will do well, as long as she doesn't put on the atrocious accent that you and I both did. I, as an Australian, did as well. And it was terrible.
It's in the water.
Yeah, it's in the blood. So that's the Sandra-Nina pair. Let's talk about Sophie Keisha, who I spoke about on the podcast with Amy, and her sister KJ, that they're calling her. Kate, there's two Kate, so she's KJ.
Oh, and I love this because I know this is lost on you, quite literally, Shannon. But KJ's name is Kate Austin.
Yes.
And holy crap, there is someone named Kate Austin
so cool.
playing on a season of a Survivor.
Love it.
Kate Austin did have some time in Survivor. I don't know if KJ lives on a peach farm, perhaps, but we know that Kate Austin likes to go by many names. And so it makes sense that she's going by another one here in KJ. We shall see if she plays like a criminal.
I got it all. Understood it. And again, pretty much from 2008, right? Like, I'm not so...
Yep, I think Lost it in real well, non-controversial whatsoever. I'm in the middle of season 3, I believe.
Don't tell me how it ends. Yeah. Look, okay, let's talk about Sophie first. So, in her video, she talks about being a massive fan. She says she watched since she was 8. She also says she's 31. Doing some quick math, that means that she's been a fan since 2 years before the show was invented. I think that's pretty impressive as a fan. Like, to get... screeners that early on before people even hit the beach.
I think we're talking Expedition Robinson then,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like
that's
truly
hardcore.
Checking out the Swedish content.
Exactly. With the subtitles as a child, like that's impressive. So what I find really interesting about Sophie and KJ is that like in talking about them, so Sophie describes the relationship as disruptive but loyal. KJ described it as a roller coaster, and I was like, what is going on here? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like maybe it's the difference in hair color, but it really does seem like I'm going to use another elemental term here, fire and ice, in a little bit of a perspective. Like KJ described Sophie as
fire.
I mean, it's all there. Like all the elements are out there. Call Captain Planet.
Yeah, it's all within the same family of blood. It's all within the family. That's literally the
thing.
There
you go. Exactly. But KJ said Sophie is bold and confident, which makes sense given like her own, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, while she's more understated and subdued. That really is also a dynamic that I think we got between these two, is like there's the extrovert and the introvert. And given her career path, it does seem like Sophie is more of the extrovert.
Yeah, so she said she'd never vote KJ out, and then KJ said she'd vote Sophie out. So I was also like, okay, well, there's some sparks happening around this relationship. But yeah, Sophie says that KJ is more likely to win because it is that like understated thing where Sophie is, as I said, I followed her for many years. Okay, if you haven't listened to the preview podcast, firstly, how dare you? Secondly, I like mommy bloggers. It's my secret shame. Okay, it's out there now.
Now, let's boil down this. What do you like about them?
Their lives are interesting. They give birth on Instagram.
What? They give birth on Instagram?
Yeah.
Like how much do you see?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think I watched Sophie's birth of her child. I watched there was
did she live stream the birth of her child?
I'm fairly certain that she did that, yeah.
Oh my dear God. The internet has gone way too public. We need where's the FCC? We need to strike some things down here.
I watched a video where it's a mommy blogger, but she was on The Bachelor, so I watched her, and then it was like tap for sensitive content because it was like her birth. I was like, okay. And I just like, it's like, oh, wow.
Well, at least you warned me ahead of time. I know what I was getting. I signed the contract.
Yeah. So anyway, I like mommy bloggers. I follow their life. I like cute kids. I don't know. But then it gets kind of toxic. It's like this weird like mixture of drama and wholesomeness that I don't think you can get many other places. So
it's drama and it's wholesomeness, but it's also like drama underneath the mask of wholesomeness as well, right? Because then there's like, oh, what are you faking for the clicks, as it were. So there's a lot going on there about the idea of like possibly exploiting your family to make a career.
Yeah, and then they fight with each other and then you're involved in that. And anyway, look, I'm trying to cut back for reasons that actually will come up on this podcast. But I haven't followed her on social media for many years. I do think she's a really big and loud personality. Like, you don't get to be a mummy blogger who live streams your birth without being a big personality. Like, you're out
big
there.
Moves.
Yeah, you're making a very, very big move. So I do think that that is a pretty accurate assessment from what I've seen. But the thing I wanted to talk about like the whole mummy blogger culture in relation to Survivor is that there's this rumor out there that Sophie Kasich got paid $200,000 to be on the show. She has said that that is not true. I really just want to say that this is like not a good rumor and we shouldn't give it credence. And I have to bring it up on the podcast now, which I guess kind of validates it in some way. But I also want to talk about why I think that it's not legit. Basically, it comes from this outlet that's like kind of a reality TV, spoilery, gossipy podcast and news outlet that had a source that said she got $200,000 for playing. Firstly, this would be completely insane. It does work on Australian Survivor that some players, the big name players, will get paid and some people don't get paid. And then they just have to accept that they're one of the non-paids. But $200,000, 40% of the prize money would be completely insane. It would be, from my mind, the absolute most by like the longest of shots that anyone's ever been paid. She's quite famous. She has 260,000 or so Instagram followers. She will bring in some viewers, but she's not like Hugh Jackman, our most famous of Australians. Like, she's a mummy blogger. They didn't pay her $200,000. The outlet that has reported this, which honestly the person at the center of it kind of scares me, so I don't really want to talk about it, but now I have to. They also said last year that they had a source that Australian Survivor players sleep in hotels. Like, should we really be validating this in any way? It's basically the Daily Mail. There's nothing to this rumor, I would say. And if they said Sandra got $200,000, I would kind of believe it. Like, it would still be crazy, but that's only like $130,000 US. Maybe it's worth her while. They've really used Sandra in the marketing. Like, she's been such a pool. They haven't even used Sophie really in the marketing. If they paid her $200,000, you'd think she'd be out in front. So I just want to kind of debunk the rumor on that and just put my flag down on saying that I think really that it's total bullshit.
I mean, that would be quite the investment for, like you said, very little return. If it was a celebrity that honestly existed outside of social media, had like household name value from that perspective, I could understand it. But yeah, I don't think they're paying a mommy blogger $200,000 to come onto Australian Survivor.
Yeah, like, they have so many influencers. Can you imagine if they were kind of like paying? She has 265,000 followers. So if they're paying basically that equivalent to the influences that they've had, like, the show would go bankrupt. That's not something that they can do. It's crazy.
Maybe that's, you know, is that why they scaled it back a day? Because that was the amount that it took to run every day of Survivor. Like, well, we got to pay her appearance fee.
Yeah, like, that costs $200,000 a day. We can't do it. So I think that this is, like, the issue. This is why I'm pulling back on the mommy blogger thing, because then outlets like this get involved in the Survivor stuff when it's usually, like, all, like, Bachelor stuff and dating shows. But now when there's influencers and stuff on Survivor, it all kind of gets a little murky, like bloody water would. And yeah, I don't like that. Like, stay away from my franchise. I don't believe there's any truth to this rumor. So Sophie, I do think, is a huge personality. Apparently KJ is not. She's a mom too. I don't follow her at this time. Maybe I should. She's understated. She didn't live stream her birth. What am I getting out of this influencer relationship?
Wow. Is she able to make the moves if she didn't live stream her birth? I mean, that being said, there is a reason why Sophie herself outright said in her video that KJ is more likely to win Soul Survivor than her. And I think that will translate to the game as well. I think Sophie's going to go pre-merge here. I think that $200,000 is going to go out the window here, because I believe she says in her bio, I will try my best initially, but my personality and persona is rarely one that can fly under the radar. Even when I try, it will be a strategy of mine, but a difficult task for me. And not to say that, like, polarizing outcasts don't make it far into the game. Look at George. But I think George is also a rare situation. And I think if you're looking for easy reasons to get rid of someone, if someone is not flying under the radar and is just making a big personality out of themselves and drawing a lot of attention to them, that's a very easy reason to get rid of somebody early on when the reasons are not exactly plentiful.
Yeah, it's weird because Sophie knows the things about herself that I kind of said on the last podcast about her kind of being this polarizing personality and like out there and how that can be a negative thing. But then in her video talks about like wanting to be like a good and reliable teammate and just kind of really hang with people socially. So I'm not really sure how like those two things are reconciled. But I would say pre-merge for Sophie, based on a lot of that, based on following her for 6 years, I just feel like she's way too out there. Like you don't become a personality like that that makes headlines like this to be a wallflower enough to kind of make it through the early part of the game. So I would say pre-merge, and I would say she's a blood. For KJ, I say she's a water. Like, that's the clear duality. Yeah. I would say post-merge. I think, like, if Sophie does go early, she'll be kind of unshackled from that partner. Apparently, she's, like, a really big fan. This was, like, a two-decade dream for her. And Sophie said on social media she was originally asked to go out. Oh, no, she originally was going to go out with her ex-husband, Jared, who she's still really good friends with, who played a handful of football games, which they would enjoy. And then they kind of wanted two women. So she called KJ and KJ came in, and this is like really like her dream. And she's like a massive, massive fan of the show. So if she's like this understated water person who's a big fan, who might kind of have a more individual game, unless Sophie really does stick around and maybe like make some negative relationships for KJ. But I could see it going quite positively for KJ.
Yep, I very much do as well. I mean, she's someone who has studied the game. She said she meticulously watches old seasons, which does not automatically translate to success, as we'll talk about with, again, another one of these castmates here, but I think certainly does help, especially in comparison to people who clearly don't. I do like her intention of wanting to play with a diverse group of people that, of course, you want to personally connect with people to form alliances. But I think if you're looking for like a skill set of individuals, it's sort of like creating a team for a heist. You want a little bit of everything. So I think she has a really good head on her shoulders. You know, there is maybe a physical aspect that I'm not sure is there that might put her on the chopping block early on if Water does lose. Speaking of Water, in her bio, she says she's good at fishing. I can't remember, though. Do they fish much in like the new outback setting of Australian Survivor?
I think they fish a bit.
Okay, so maybe that's going to make her going to make her a bit valuable for camp life as well.
Yeah, no, she says she's like not afraid to get her hands dirty. She's like not a famous person. This is like kind of the thing where you'll see these connections where it's like they wanted Sophie Keisha, and then they were like, who are you going to bring? And there's a few of those where you can kind of tell who was approached and who was like the tag along. So maybe that'll be like the best tag along thing ever for KJ. Maybe it'll go really, really well. So I think we're pretty much agreed on that pair. Let's talk about Sam and Mark while we're talking about some people that we know. I mean, we've spoken about it in the preview podcast as well. I thought it was interesting that Sam said she wouldn't blindside Mark, and Mark in his video said he would blindside her. This is kind of like a version of the newlywed game. Like, are they watching these videos back after the whole season has been filmed and are like, hey, you would do what? Like, hopefully they didn't find that out in real time.
I mean, Sam has never played without Mark, but Mark has played without Sam. It was one episode, but
it went so well.
But that's the thing, though. I think that, yes, he was a big target, but he nearly did get away with his life, because if you remember, after Sam was voted out, so you sort of, you know, you talk through the story of Sam and Mark, but Sam really comes in, not necessarily guns blazing, but like really comes in making a big sort of personality for herself. She is the one that really helps command that first vote, that first split between Joan and Kent, that really has Luke in particular like very wary of her, to the point where he actually goes rogue, I think, at that first vote, right? Mm-hmm. Accidentally causes the tie that then throws Sam off. So Mark is definitely more of the beta to her alpha. But once she gets voted out, Luke and Jericho like approach him and are like, oh, actually, now Jackie and Henry are the power couple. Let's split them off. So again, had things gone a little bit differently, maybe Mark ends up making that like weird Redemption Island Exile Beach swap, and then he's able to see a new lease on life. So maybe that's the other thing as well. He's more used to it, but I'm freaking pumped for these two.
Wow. I'm so excited for Sam and Mark.
Well, there's so many cool things about it. First off, Australian Survivor 2017 is one of my favorite Survivor seasons of all time. I think it is an absolute dynamite cast. I love that you pointed out how many of them have come back, deservedly so. And Sam and Mark, I think, were two big personalities in the pre-merge. Mark's story alone is super cool. He's an ex-army commander, but when he entered Australia, he was living in New York wanting to be a fashion designer. You know, like that seems like almost a story that's fictional. That's something that was a tall tale almost of someone wanting to go from essentially wearing fatigues to making them for being fatigued sitting at the sewing machine. So I thought that Mark was someone who
well,
I was
like
really
interested
in.
Shop?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's
that's the name of the book. Yeah, I actually think he has a book. He's written a book. It's not called that.
But I do think that I was really interested by him, actually, in 2017, even from the first episode where he's like, he was the reluctant leader, right? He's like, I don't want to do this, but I have survival experience. And remember when they did that first fire making challenge and they essentially like forced him to compete and then he ended up winning. So I actually always really liked Mark and Sam. I was always sad that they ended up going. And now we have this additional wrinkle of besides Robin Amber, you know, they are the second couple to come on and play against each other in Survivor history.
Well, no, I mean, there's tons of couples, like the other Blood versus Water couples.
I mean, I should say, people who have previously played together and then came back to play together again.
Met on the show, came back.
Like, yeah. And how weird is that going to be? They're going to be on separate tribes, so it won't exactly be playing together, or hopefully it will be if they both make the merge, but such an odd concept that they have been in such lockstep, including during their time on Asanga Beach, and now they have to be facing off against each other. It's a really cool idea, and that's the essence, in my opinion, of what is so interesting about Blood versus Water. So I think it's this idea of they are two interesting personalities who have interesting stories. I mean, Amy really talked up just how much of a badass Sam is, on top of having this dynamic that honestly will probably be front and center for as long as the two of them are on the show together, and I think it's going to be dynamite.
They both are like physical beasts in very different ways. So I think that they should
be relied on. Yeah, their videos are of them working out in some nondescript, non-lit gym, just beasting out.
I was watching the videos with Peter and I was like, this is like us running together, hiking together, working out together. Kind of like me and Peter's couple package, and it's just us. Like, in the same, like we're watching TV and I'm watching a different TV show. That's a third
in a
TV
different
show.
Room.
Yeah. Yeah, we've gone to the other room to watch TV. Now we're napping. Okay, we're back to the TV. We'd be podcasting. Like, yeah, no, but I'm like, this is very much us. Always pushing each other up that hill. But definitely physical beasts. I think that they could rely on that. And they both say in different ways that they've, like, learned a lot about the game since they played. Sam says she, like, wants to play a relationship game with fluidity. She says it's a marathon, not a sprint, which, again, for me, I would be like, you know, it's a series that comes out weekly. It's not a TV binge. See, that would be my analogy for her. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
But also, I think that's more applicable. Like, I do think that the early day Australian Survivor is valid of, hey, just keep pushing through. It's a long game. There's a long things to do. But Australian Survivor, both the game and the game structure has changed so much that it really almost is playing one day at a time, which I think benefits someone like Sandra. So I do think actually Sam might be actually walking in with the wrong mindset. I do like when she says that she's not going to purposely alienate anybody, because I do think that is something that...
Yeah, you don't want to alienate. Like, why is it even something that needs to be said? I'm not going to purposefully alienate.
I mean, again, did you watch last season what happened on the Brains Tribe? Like, it happens. It happens accidentally. I mean, that being said, I know Sam in particular walks in with like this change mindset, but unfortunately for me, this is a case of like, I don't know how much a Chagger can change her stripes. You know, she is such a headstrong personality, validly so, because she is so badass. I do wonder how long it'll take her to like keep her mouth shut until then she finally just like opens her mouth. And is like, okay, no, this is what we're doing. You know, how much of that has really going to be tempered when push comes to shove, when the deprivation comes in and she decides to step into that leadership role? Now, look, we'll talk about her tribe layout. She could feasibly do that and step into another leadership role. But all you need, much like she did in 2017, is those couple of people to be like, Sam's a big threat. I think we need to take her out. And then she's in the exact same position she was in Asanga.
I feel like Amy pumped me up on Sam. Like, she's really strong. I think she'll be super helpful to the tribe. She seems to have learned from her mistakes. Like, both of them really seem to be like, we really thought about what we did. Like, we're really committed to not doing that again. Mark says he, like, knows he needs to be more than physical. He wants to have a network and uses lie detection skills. Says he has a soft heart and empathetic. So I think that there are skills there. I think there always have been, and I think they're kind of smart enough to know where to pivot, especially for Sam. Like, Mark probably came in doing quite a bit right and was, like, forced into certain positions. But I think Sam, I'm going to say post-merge, I think that she'll be just such an asset in the pre-merge. I think she can get it done, and then she's a huge threat. I think for Mark, I'm going to say late pre-merge, just because I feel that he's such an obvious, visible threat. Like, he's just, like, a massive guy. He's so strong. I could see it at, like, a Simon level of the game, like, kind of at that midway point where you're like, I just don't want them to get to merge. Like, he is just such an obvious target. So that's where I'm putting them. But I think they could both do well. I think that Sam is a blood, and I think that Mark is a water. So
yeah,
that's where I'm going with it.
But for that reason, though, I'm actually going to disagree with you. I think Mark's going to make it farther than Sam. I know, finally, some disagreement here between the blood and the water, because I do think it is this sort of perspective of the beta. Like, yes, there might be some Simon comparisons, but Simon was an alpha through and through from every decision that he made. Mark was somebody who was willing to, maybe it's because of his occupational path, follow orders, was someone who was more than willing to just, like, be a part of an alliance, keep his head low. He was only, again, put in that leadership position because he looked the part, essentially, and he had the skills. So I could see something where maybe he does get, like, looked upon for a couple of decisions in the challenges. But I think from a personality perspective, especially when separated from Sam, I don't see him necessarily being the one to lead moves, which would not necessarily put a target on him. And let's remember that Sam ended up going before him for that very reason. So I do think that I would say Mark definitely post-merge. I go back and forth with Sam. I could see Sam post-merge. I could also see Sam in a late pre-merge stage, almost like a Simon type of thing, where it's like, hey,
now she's the Simon. One of you is going to be the Simon. I don't know who in this relationship is going to be.
But one of you is the Simon. One of you has to take the three idols. Yeah, this idea of it's getting into the late pre-merge. We need to get rid of a threat. And unfortunately, you know, the bell might ring twice for Sam. But I'm really excited to see them. Again, I enjoyed their personalities. I think now having them come back together as well is going to be a very unique dynamic to, you know, I don't know how much people will regard the relationship they played, you know, 4 years ago when this filmed. Are people going to remember that? How massive fans are they? Is it going to be an automatic sort of like, well, these two are married, so therefore they're only going to be loyal to each other? I guess another question I'll put out there, Shandon, is do you think a jury would let a returning player win this season?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see why not. Like, Luke had a huge chance when he was the only returning player on that season. I don't think that's something, like, why would that be something that they're really anti?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends. It depends on the cast, really. I mean, we've certainly seen it with Big Brother seasons. I think it was a case a bit with maybe something like Survivor Philippines of this is our game. You know, they're coming in here and playing. They have an unfair advantage. I do agree that maybe if it's one person like Luke, that helps a bit, as opposed to maybe an awkward number like 4 out of 24
be
a bit more of a big number. Let me also throw out another question to you randomly, because this has been bandied about as well. What are the chances we get a final three this season?
Is that where the day went? Is that where day 48 went?
That honestly could have been the day, because, you know, if you look at the numbers from the past two seasons, we assume that there was going to be a final three or something in All Stars, but because Lee respectfully and understandably left the game. And then last season, you have Chelsea end up getting medevaced, which then also both cases set things down to a final two with 9 jury members, when you could very easily see them instead do, you know, a final three instead. And a lot of people were bringing up this prospect of they want to see a final three that possibly is a pair and a single. Do you think that they would want to go for that?
I think they have really wanted to do a final three. Like, I think that the purity of the final two that we all love is something that has been accidentally happening, much to our delight, but it's not been intentional. And it has been basically those two medivacs or evacuations in different ways that has made it happen. So I think that maybe their intention will be a final three. But then it's also like they can't spare one person leave, like one person getting medevaced, one person quitting, like one extra thing out of 24 people. Like, as we've seen in the last two seasons, like that might be a lofty goal. So maybe that's their intention and it doesn't happen again. But I think that that is something Australian Survivor wants to do. It's the big show. It's extreme. Like they, I think they're a show that wants to be doing the final three, but just can't afford to.
Yeah, it's a good point that, I mean, we looked even as soon as last season, right? Like when someone isn't feeling well pre-merge, we have this sort of medical rule in
effect.
They
really don't want people to go, yeah.
Yeah, they really do not want to have two people leave in an episode. Mm-hmm. So I agree that I think should things go right, they want a final three, but I also love, I'm obsessed with this sort of idea of them constantly running into an obstacle where like, we can't get a final three this time, damn you circumstances, and they just never do a final three in Australian Survivor history.
Yeah, and stumble into the better, more fun thing, which is the final two, which like, oh no, we got a 2-1-1 at the final four, which we wouldn't have if there wasn't this like really cool social strategic thing with that happens when there's a final two and there's like this really physical component at the final three and like the life water instead of life blood. Yeah, the life water of the show is like that torture final three challenge, and not having that or having it at the final four where it doesn't, like if you win you don't just get to choose who comes with you, like there's such a purity in that that's so beautiful. It would just to me like really kill like a spark in the game. So I don't want anyone to get medevac for sure, but like I also want them to keep doing this like epic end game, and there have been such epic end games in Australian Survivor because of the final two and the strategy that produces and the cool way they do the challenge with that. Ugh, I don't want them to change that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you and I love the final two. It's one of these things that I think hooks people into Australian Survivor. If they bring a bunch of people in only to bring in a final three, that is not very fun. But given how they love bombastic, big and things to do, I think ending on a big way, right? Like we have certainly had some blowout victories the past few seasons. I think if they'd rather say, okay, we'll have a final three and a close victory rather than a final two and, you know, something that's incredibly lopsided, they would much rather go with the former.
And it's not just that. It just means like an alpha player has like one less round to go. Someone like Harry might win over someone like Pia. And I think they prefer that. I think that they want that big player less under the radar. They'd rather a blood wins than a water, and a final three gives that chance more. So I think they would prefer that. So let's talk about Jesse and Jordy, who I don't want to like, you know, spoil all the information I have. I feel like they might both be waters, not just because they're the Surfer Brothers, but that's what
I was going to say. They're running around in water. Jesse's a triathlete. I'm assuming he throws a lot of water on him as he's participating in his various activities. Yeah, these are sort of like our carefree dudes. I would not say these are our requisite bogans of the season. I think there are a couple people that
did
fall into that category.
Did you learn what bogan was for Australian Survivor?
Oh, absolutely. I did not know what a bogan was before I met John Eastow personally.
That's a best line. Out of context, account has to take that line.
Did someone say my name?
They told you what a bogan is. What a beautiful education you've had through that.
Oh, I've truly educated you in all the best ways, Mike. Oh, thank you, John, so much. I really appreciate it. Here's your Mexican parma. He just ran off like a little doggy. I threw it up. We should also mention here, there is a Jordan and a Jordy. And we're talking about Jordy, not LaForge.
A lot of J names for a lot of very athletic men. I'm struggling.
Oh, it's like season one all over again. We'll see if anyone uses the alphabet strategy.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm just really trying to get my head around a lot of these people, but
there is literally a J name. There's a guy named Jay.
Yeah, there's a literal J. This is my problem. But I think that I'm wondering, do I think they're water types just because I keep seeing them in water? No, I think they are water types. Like Jesse is 21, which is very young. And I think in his video that really came across to me, like he comes across, I think, as very young.
His outfit is the best. He looks so cool and he looks like he came out in 1985. I love the freaking like highlighter zip up that he's wearing and the backwards visor. Holy moly.
Hey,
I feel like
visor.
He's ready. Oh, I mean, yeah, he might have a connection with someone, but I feel like he's about to bully me at a ski resort or something for his girl. But I actually really
don't think it's 95. That feels like the 80s.
That's I said 85.
Oh, OK. Then you were right. Never mind.
So Jesse is a massive fan of the show. He is the big endurance guy, right? He says he even finds comfort in pain. But it seems like he says that he's going to be more of the physical person to Geordi's social game. But the social game, the example he uses is like, well, Geordi is good at building relationships with women. So it's like, OK, your brother is the bigger flirt. So he's going to have the better social game by proxy.
Yeah, he basically just called his brother a player.
Yeah, exactly. And we know players have the best social game in Survivor history.
That's what women love, being played. But I do think the videos, to me, gave like a really strong sense of this brother duo, because I felt Jesse's youth. He is a triathlete, so physically he's really going to be there. It says they're polar opposites, and I kind of felt that. Like, I feel like Jesse will be the physical one. And then Geordi, I felt like really good about in the video. Like, I'd never make a man my winner pick in Australian Survivor, but I was like, this guy actually could do everything he's saying. Like, he says he's a big fan. He says he'll be a triple threat. He says he's the love child of the Golden God and Matthew McConaughey, which is an interesting image. I don't know if I want that.
I don't know if I want David and Matthew McConaughey. I mean, it'll be a very handsome child, but I don't know. I don't know if I want Matthew McConaughey's sperm involved in there. Like, does that translate well to Survivor? I don't think so. We talked about, back during our Survivor South Africa preseason coverage, about the love child of Nicole and Rob. That, to me, makes more sense than Golden God and Matthew McConaughey.
Well, I don't see, like, a ton of the Golden God thing. I kind of do see the Matthew McConaughey thing. Like, he just feels like a really chill guy, but he says he'll, like, charm the pants off you and then stab you in the back. So I guess it's that, like, killer instinct that's Dave. Like, I just see the water type that could kind of have this even amount of everything. Like, he doesn't look like too threatening, but is a fan who is maybe strategic, seems like you could get along with him, like, has this good energy, is social, is the least physical one of the pair because his brother's like a champion triathlete, but it's still like the surfer dude who's clearly like really strong. Like, I'm high on him. I wouldn't make a man my winner if he's an Australian Survivor. Honestly, if I would, I would have highly considered him. I was even highly considering him. Like, I just felt in the video, I felt an energy where I was like, I could see you being central without sticking out too much on any side, like being in that really kind of even space.
I do not disagree without saying too much. Yeah, I think that he has a really laid back side of him, and he's only, you know, he's in his mid-20s. He doesn't have like a world of age above Jesse. He even says, I have 3.5 years of maturity on him. You wouldn't believe it, but I do.
But that's, so I think, also different. I feel like 21 and what's Geordi, like 25, I guess, that I feel like that is a lot. That actually is like a lot of time. It's like your whole young adulthood.
He's also implying, though, that he's a bit of a kid at heart, which is good. You know, people loved Luke and David's shenanigans. Maybe that's more so what he's referring to from his, you know, spiritual dad in the form of the Golden God. Mm. It's also interesting to note, though, that he has learned fire making, and he also did some physical training, according to his bio. So I do think that he's not exactly like a slouch. We have certainly talked about some of these pairs where it is like, I'm the big strong one, I'm the little smart one. I don't think we're necessarily getting that here. I think Geordi himself.
Or Marvin? Yeah, exactly. What was going on with that?
It's Milhouse and Nelson, or Martin and Nelson, if you will. Hark to the tale of Jesse and the boy he loves so dear. So I think that Geordi is someone who could probably hold his own. I think both these guys are making the merge. I don't see a scenario where I think either one of them, just due to their own dispositions, draw targets onto themselves. And once they get there and once they work together, I think they actually could be a pretty powerful pair. I know that there's a chance that maybe then they'll be gunned for because you look at like these two guys and you say they could run table on the game. But I think as long as they come back together, I think they'll work really well off of each other. Water feeds into water in that regard. And I think they actually have they're a pair that I think is going to do a lot of damage. Are they going to make the biggest, most substantial, incredible moves? No. But, you know, going back a couple winners, that's almost never been the case in Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I feel like I'll say post-merge for both. I don't think Jesse can win. He's just like way too young. But he has skills and he'll be an asset to the tribe without being, I think, like too threatening. Well, he will become threatening later on if he's like this massive endurance athlete.
Is Jesse the youngest person on the cast?
I think he might be. I can't think of a younger one off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm looking as I don't believe. So I think actually Jesse and Geordi might be. Oh, Amy's 24. I was going to say they might have been the two youngest people on the cast.
Yeah,
but
Nina's
still
around 24 as well. So,
but still, Jesse's the youngest person in the cast. I mean, that also has its impact, though, right? Like, he certainly is playing with parents. They could look to adopt him in a manner of speaking. That could certainly help. We've certainly seen younger players benefit from that.
But then it's also the Xander effect, which is like why I think he can't win, where it's that they can't give the money to someone of that age. There's not that like clear respect for someone of that age. Like, they won't vote you out, they'll take you far. You have a lot of game to play and a lot of room to maneuver, but I don't know that you can win. So that's kind of where I see Jesse. Geordie, I think, has major winner potential. I'll say post-merge for them both. Like, Geordie, I think, has the charm, the social game, and it's physical enough. Like, I see it. And he says as a fan, yeah. I'm here.
And he's wearing overalls. We'd love to see it.
Yeah, those are all the boxes that you want. All right. Well, the last note, we have two more pairs that we already spoke about in the preview. Melissa and Michelle. I think they're calling them Mel and Michelle. Mel and Michelle.
Oh, yeah. That certainly helps things a lot.
There you go. It's good because it's not that there aren't like identical twins and all these like confusing names. So they are the identical twins. Mel is the fan. Michelle is not the fan. We're trying to keep these people.
Mel is the, listen, there's three letters in Mel, there's three letters in fan. So Mel is the fan.
Okay, I'll remember that.
And Michelle is the non-fan. Michelle is a speech pathologist. Mel is the chiropractor. Mel refers to essentially each other as she is the sunshine and Michelle is the thunderstorm.
And I feel like Michelle validates that. And that's a really good way, I think, to separate them in your mind. So Mel, who is the fan, because the same number, you get it. Like, she apparently is the sunshine. She's apparently the optimist. Michelle is the thunder and the realist. Like, there's this kind of like evil twin thing happening for Michelle, because she also said she was the black sheep. And I kind of see that dichotomy. Where also Michelle, more than I feel anyone else on the cast, was like obsessed with beating Mel. Like, she said she really wants to take Mel out on her terms and beat her. Like, it would be succeeding in her quest to beat her at her favorite game. Like, Michelle's an evil twin.
If JLP gave the opportunity for Michelle to break Mel's leg and have her get medevac from the game, she may do it. Like, yeah. She may be like, oh, I'm going to slip something into the water supply to, like, you know, give her a stomach bug for a little bit.
Yeah, Michelle might be like, I could do better with a final two, and then just, like, get Mel many that they have to do.
Exactly. So we have to play, listen, your hands are tied. If only Mel didn't fall down those stairs going into tribal council.
Yeah.
Cut to, like, her laying down the torch in her path. Mm-hmm. Yep, so Michelle refers to herself, like you said, as the black sheep. I mean, Mel... I know that when people describe themselves as like bubbly and energetic, that can often be a bit of an eye roller. But the fact that they cut to several times in several interviews where she like can't get through it because she's laughing so much, I think a lot of people are going to like Mel. I think both on and off the island, because I think that's sort of a personality, again, that people want to be around. Now, maybe, you know, there might be other circumstances for voting her out. I think Amy from season two was another example of like more of a comical character who just ends up on the wrong side of a vote and ends up getting voted out for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But it seems like from a social perspective, Mel is going to be in the better place from that perspective.
Why, you don't think someone who describes themselves or is described as thunder would be good from a social perspective?
You know what? Thunder can certainly be social. I mean, it does make noise. Look, it makes itself be heard.
You laugh now, but when season 11 is Thunder versus Sunshine, no one will be laughing because that will make no sense. And the tribes will be Sunshine and Thunder. And we'll have to come on the podcast and say if someone is Sunshine or Thunder. And that's definitely going to be the theme.
Oh, well, it's going to happen because they're going to refer to the Thunder from Down Under. So you've already written it.
Yeah, and they couldn't be any vampires because they don't like the sunlight. She's going to suck the 2008
mic. Here's the promo. I'm singing in the rain.
Yes.
Bop, bop, bop. Just like yes. That the rain comes pouring down.
Yes, I love it. They're literally going to do it. The fact that like the formula is so, so rigid, we can create the entire marketing plan within 10 seconds of coming up with the idea, and it's actually what they would do. I'd never change Australian Survivor.
Or even better, they're going to really market to like the female audience, be like, it's raining, man. Da da da. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Just like hot bods.
Stand under my umbrella. Then the echoes. Ella, Ella. Yes.
There's so many options. Yeah. I'm walking on sunshine, shine, shine. Like, and then just echoes it out as it shows them standing in the horizon behind them.
Mike, silence. I used to think, baby, you love me. Baby, I'm sure. Yes,
yes, I was going to say Casey and the Sunshine Band, but that is a different band, ironically enough, that didn't sing Walking on Sunshine. I think it's going to happen now. We've manifested it.
Yes, we have given five song suggestions. It's happening.
We are not only Survivor professionals, we are meteorologists when it comes to themes. That is our forecast.
Yeah, we want to be paid if that happens, though.
So, So I think that Mel is someone who isn't going to ingratiate herself more with her tribe mates, but she does say that she's an extreme overthinker. And considering how big of a fan she is of the show, we've had several people come in their bios and be like, I'm going to play a big game. You know, what are you doing on Survivor if you're not making big moves? I could see possibly a situation where Mel, like, overthinks something, possibly steps in it and ends up getting voted out way earlier than we may expect.
I feel like I really like Mel and I think that she's going to do really well. Like, she's the positive one who's like sunny and bright. She's a fan of the show. And they, like, I think she could be quite physical. Like, it shows her swimming. She says she'll be social and physical. Like, I'm struggling to see the downside. Then you cut to Michelle, who's like described as like the negative thunder one, who's not a fan and who seems just like really hell bent on just taking out Mel and like obsessed with the idea. So I feel like I'm going pre-merge for Michelle. And I'm going to give, I think she has a blood because she's like out for blood, literally out for blood.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And Mel is a clear water. I feel just like cool personality. I'm going to say post-merge for her. I also feel like the twin prophecy that like one isn't long for the game and one maybe is. I feel like I'm putting my money on Mel in that.
I mean, just from a production perspective, do they want both twins to make the merge? How tough is it going to be to distinguish between the two of them?
Do they have, because I know that the twinnies had like, they changed their hair, I think.
Yeah, and they also and they also wore like those different shirts, right? I think it was Natalie who wore the unicorn. So I don't know. It looks like if those videos were taken of them right before they came in, like they look pretty darn similar. They say they're 99.9999% repeating David Voce style alike.
Does that come naturally to you?
Absolutely. I'm a born mathematician in addition to Survivor professional and thematic meteorologist, but... I mean, could it be a situation where if they both make the merge,
one of them has to get medevaced? Yeah.
Or it could be a thing where, Michelle wins immunity and it's like, okay, we're voting you off, Mel. And Mel's like, no, actually, I have the necklace because Michelle gave it to me and I was pretending to be Michelle.
That would be fun if they did it. We've never got to see that happen.
They could do that, though. They could try to, like, pretend to be each other when it comes to scheming. I mean, they could be their own version of a tribe swap every episode where they just swap places and challenges.
Mel's like, you can tell me... No, sorry, Michelle. I'm going to have to get up before the first week. But Michelle's like, oh, you can tell me negative things about my sister Mel. You know I want to take her out. And then it was Mel the whole time!
She's like, oh, you smiled too much. That's a total Mel thing to do. I know you're an undercover Michelle.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe they could do some stuff with that. I feel like the duality of these twins, the names, hard. The twin thing, difficult. But the duality, clear. So I think we're both kind of on the same page with that.
Yeah. I'll just to be contentious, I will swap them.
What? You're going to swap the one who's described as like negative, not a fan, black sheep with like positive, perfect one. Like sometimes it's Occam's razor. Like that's the one that's going to do well.
Yeah, but sometimes our predictions go flippy floppy. And so this is one of my flippy floppy predictions.
Sometimes people just say things. Yeah,
exactly. Sometimes people just say things. And it might be a thing where Michelle is a speech pathologist and she certainly talks about understanding human behavior through body language. Right. And that doesn't necessarily mean
cues. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean everything. But I think being able to pick up on something is certainly a good trait to have. Namely, if people don't like you because you're a thunderstorm comparison to somebody else's sunshine.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just if it's flippy floppies, you send me some shoes or you don't send me shoes. I don't know what's happening.
I'll send you flippy floppies if you need them.
Send me flippy floppies.
It is summer for you.
Exactly. All right. Well, the last pair that we already spoke about in the preview, then we have to get to a whole other half of the cast. So we're moving at a really good speed. But Croc and Chrissy. I feel like Chrissy is like kind of already an icon online. I want to say, and it's so important, Mark Percy pointed this out, there was a typo in her name in the bios and it said Chizzy. There's no way anyone in Channel 10 did that on purpose for me. But I love it so much and I kind of feel like she should get some preseason Chizzy points for it. But then also the sanctity of the Chizzy. So I obviously would never do that in 100 million years. But like I would want to if I was a different person.
Unless.
No.
Is she a Chizzy brought to life? Got struck by lightning in the Michelle thunderstorm and came to life and took the form of a person.
Well, there is a Chizzy. It's Matt Chisholm, who the Chizzy is named for.
Right. But this is the representation of the Chizzy. Maybe represents, you know, how you how you would feel about playing Survivor, right? This idea of not liking sand or dirt or water. Maybe you wouldn't, you know, specialize in the fake tan, but certainly feeling out of your element. That certainly screams chizzy to me.
I hear you, but then she also like didn't know what tribal council was called, and you know how I feel about people who don't do their research. So I feel like I don't vibe with that part of the whole thing.
Maybe she lost her memory of who she truly is and she'll find herself out there.
Maybe there was a typo by the intern. Maybe.
But that could be true as well. But yeah, Chrissy is fantastic. They are giving her like the dodo edits of all. I don't think I've ever heard of a preseason dodo edit before, but she is getting one. She has there's an entire video separate from her video about how out of her element she is, which really makes me think, because I know that, you know, Amy brought this up as well. I think you did too, that they always put the first boot in the promo. So now I'm like, now I'm playing mind games with myself, right? Like, oh, is it this? Could she be the first boot and they're just really building her up? Or could she surprisingly be long for this game? Like, really take to it, almost like a Michelle Dugan from season two. And she becomes like the ultimate Suri-esque story of she got up off the couch.
Yeah, those are the two options because she's like very out of her depth. I have her going pre-merge because, again, like Occam's razor, but I definitely people can surprise you. But I mean, she's a mum. She's a part-time teacher. She seems passionate about homes. I feel like, other than being out of her depth, Croc is like a clear threat on the other side. So I could see them like taking her out to weaken him when they need Croc, maybe. Or, well, on the other side, they're not going to take him out. So maybe the other side wants to weaken him in that way. She says she wants to be the mother hen, play the middle, clean and socialize, but listen. And then she says mothers can be trusted, right? And it was like, Chrissy, I wish you'd done any research on how mothers fare on Survivor. Although, better in Australian Survivor, but it's still like not something you necessarily want to lean into as a trope.
Yeah, I'm just really excited to see Chrissy no matter what, because I agree. I'm going to hedge my bets and have her go pre-merge as well. It honestly might be a Janelle situation. I think that was one of the most accurate calls we made last season, was like Janelle just does not fit in on this ultra brawny tribe for many reasons. She's going to go first, and she did. She might be a very easy target if water ends up losing. But if we have a bunch of, you know, a bunch of crocs in the water, in a manner of speaking, wanting to snipe at each other, she might be someone that they could very easily pick up. So it's one of these things where I am saying pre-merge, but for entertainment's sake, I'm hoping post-merge. And I think there is a possible world, you know, the Doctor Strange-esque, like one in a million possibility that she is able to make it into a post-merge setting. In which case, like you say, the Parabolic Women, she's probably going to be very underestimated.
Parabolic Woman, but I'm not sure if she'll win. But I could see her, like, kind of making it through the pre-merge through, like, her own antics and then making it to the post-merge, and then she's just, like, long for the game.
Yeah.
So, possibly. Croc, I feel like, is her opposite, like, in every way. Like, he's a huge fan. She's never seen the show. He's, like, a huge physical asset who wants to, like, give his all in challenges, but then also has this, like, he wants to use his observational skills, make genuine connections, like, work out what makes people tick. Like, he really seems to be there for the game of it all. He's not an athlete who's, like, challenges. Like, he's here to play Survivor. So I'm really excited by that. He also seems, like, kind of fun and funny.
Yeah, it seems like an actual, you know, fun personality. It seems like he's gone after being in the NRL. It seems like he's a dock worker now, which I find super interesting. I'm always intrigued to see what happens
with
when athletes...
he said, working with cranes.
Okay, or crayons, maybe.
Your cranes.
He works down at the crayon factory. He's a dock worker at the Crayola factory.
And in what world did I say crayons? What job would be?
Yeah, just dock worker at the crayon factory.
Did you really think I said crayons?
No, I did not think you said crayons.
Okay, because I was like...
I said that Croc works at a crayon dock.
Oh, because I was just like... What?
Do you think Croc got the job because his name rhymes with doc?
Yeah, you're hired.
Yeah, that's honestly how you respond to that question. You just say yes and you move on.
No, that's what we do in Australia. That's what we do. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Croc rhymes with dog. And that's the end of our 3-week course. You are now a dog worker.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, and this person has risen far above. And that's how Croc ends up working at the crayon doc. I'm excited for Croc because he seems like much like in the Matt Rogers and the Brian Lake vibe, right? Like, No offense to Simon Black or Cardboard Cutout Commando, but very much not in that mold, in that he is an ex-athlete, but seems to have a passion for the game and also a personality on top of that. That being said, does that make him stick out like a sore thumb? Maybe. I think some of the stuff you were saying about Mark honestly might be thrown onto Croc. And I actually believe, are they on the same tribe? Maybe they are. No, Sam's on Blood. Yeah. So I think that there could be some stuff where Kroc is viewed, especially in that late post, that late pre-merge again of like, we got to get this dude out, you know, otherwise he'll make a run at the game. But I think he's going to ingratiate himself really well. He says people won't expect he's a big teddy bear. So I think he might be able to walk in and certainly be like, yeah, I might have this hardened exterior, but like I'm someone you can emotionally connect with, which I think is going to do really well for him. But I do wonder how much is going to catch up with him before he ends up getting tackled. They tackle people in rugby, right?
God, if I know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they tackle people in rugby. And look, I don't think anyone's going to think he's a fan. They're going to think like, oh, he is an athlete. He's good in challenges. We can take him out when you want. But he's like a super secret fan. So I think that's really good for him. I'm going to say post-merge, physical asset to the tribe, secret fan, weirdly smart that people wouldn't think so, possibly due to the concussions. But look, I assume you get concussions in rugby. He's a blood.
We're making a lot of assumptions about the sport of rugby, this podcast.
Yeah, he's a blood. He's always up for blood. He had like the most tribunal, actual tribunal, not tribal council, but most tribunal visits tied in the whole history of NRL, which is a lot. That's crazy. And Chrissy Akamaka, is Chrissy a blood?
I think Chrissy is... No, I don't think she's... I think particularly when it comes to Survivor, she is more of a water. Like, she might be more of an alpha personality, but I don't think that automatically means blood, in my opinion.
I think Chrissy's a blood. Like, I think she's a bit of a firecracker. I could imagine her, like, as a mom, like, really going to bat for her kids. Like, I know she's out of her depth, but I don't think it's in this tranquil way. Like, I think, she, like, if she fails, she'll fail loudly, and that's the blood way. I can say that as a
way is to leave a splatter behind. Yeah. Is Kroc a water just because crocodiles are found in the water?
No, that's not how this works. He's a clear blood. It feels like you're not even really taking the game seriously. Kroc says he can influence people. Like, he's really there for the mental game. I'm excited about Kroc and Chrissy. Kroc said also he's like, Chrissy is a sister I've never had, but even though he has a sister. I was vibing with it. I thought he was funny.
Yeah, we should talk about that, about the fact that we have a brother and sister-in-law pairing, which is so odd compared to, you know, when it came to blood versus water proper, people are like, Jervis and his niece, that's an odd stretch. It's like, now we're going to have, we'll get even worse, I think, later on.
Yeah.
And brother and sister-in-law is super interesting for a blood versus water pairing, because there is this, like, intermediate person, right, where if you tick the other person off, it's going to also incur the wrath of that middleman.
I don't know. Like, again, I said in the preview, like, I don't see that I'm like this middle person between Jason and Peter. Like, they have their own relationship. It seems like Kroc is like a very present uncle to Chrissy's kids. Like, it's a family thing. And I don't see this one as weird. We'll get to the other kind of in-laws later, and that we will talk about. But I get this connection. They seem like very, very close. So I think this will be fine. Let's talk about some plays we haven't spoken about on RHAP yet. That is, let's talk about Andy. Oh, well, that's actually not true. We've spoken about Andy a lot on RHAP. We haven't spoken about Andy in 2022 on RHAP. Andy is back. Visor Andy. I was like, what is Andy's last name? And then I was like, wanted to Google it. And I was like, Andy Visor?
You thought his last name was Visor?
In my head for a second, I literally I couldn't remember what it was. So maybe it was Visor. So Andy's back. Like, this is honestly, it has to be said, like, the most random cast of all time, but we're vibing with it. We're dealing with it. It's is it not?
But let's look back at the original Blood versus Water cast, where I could imagine, with no offense to Andy, that I think a large reason why he was brought back is because of his partner. Much like we're like, Laura Moret, what the hell? Kat was fun, but why is she coming back? And then you look at who they brought back, they're like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think the story of Andy and Kate, his sister, I think would be something really nice to see in a Blood versus Water season. So I could absolutely see why it happened. And look, I know there are a good amount of people that are not entirely happy with this casting, considering how all over the season Andy was back in 2019. But I really loved the arc of Andy in 2019. Now, admittedly, it might have been because of the way the story was for Andy, is that he constantly thought himself the mastermind and came up with all these maneuvers, and almost every single time it blew up in his face. Mm-hmm. And I kind of love that we have a Survivor version of Wile E. Coyote, and now he's back for the second cartoon.
Yeah, no, okay. I love a pair of super fan siblings. Like, I relate to that. That's really fun. And there's a whole thing that, like, Kate is the one who pushed him to apply. And I feel like Kate brings out, like, a softness in Andy, where he's, like, uncle to her kids. And I think that I'm really interested in seeing that version of him. I talked on Talking Tribal about how I feel for Andy, that he saw his mistakes and that will bode well for him because, like, awareness is the first step to changing. I was, like, then concerned because I had, like, seen the Channel 10 videos earlier, and that's what I was talking about in order to do that podcast. And it made it seem like I felt like he understood his mistakes at the time. I don't feel that Andy, during the airing of the season, was on board with the fact that he had done anything wrong, and that would concern me. In these videos, I feel like he had more humility. Like, he said he wants to play better than last time, play a more fun, honest, and good-natured game, which was in the bio. Yeah. So I think there's, like, the passion for the game that shines through. There's more humility now than there has been. There's more awareness than there has been. There's a softness with his sister. I still think it's a rough ride for Andy. Like, I think his reputation would precede him. I'm still going to put him pre-merge. I think he's an obvious blood. But I think that those elements give him the best chance possible, but I still wouldn't bet on him to make the merge.
I don't know. I think there's a chance that he might make it. I think a big reason why he ends up making the merge in the first place, and a reason why he would make it here, is his challenge prowess. I mean, there's a reason why on that post-swap champions tribe, why the plan from Luke and Dave was to take out all of Andy's allies, but not Andy, is, you know, he came in saying he practiced a bunch of challenges in his backyard, and he is the king of throwing things at other things. Mm-hmm. And we even saw as recent as last season how that ends up becoming a big thing in these challenges. So I could honestly see that part of history repeating itself, that Andy becomes, despite being one of the older cast members, he is 49, which he does not look it.
If you had asked me before I saw his age how old he was, I would have told you 37.
Yep, completely agree. And I mean, I guess a little bit of, like, golfing sun will do a man good. You know, he's wearing the visor to make sure his skin doesn't get too leathery out there playing. But so I think that portion actually might keep him along. The question is, again, I'll go back to the same thing of how much can a tiger change his strikes? Because when I say Andy was all over the place in 2019, I think that was an understatement. He started in a really good place on the Contenders tribe. Like, he was part of this middle block that he was part of the alliance with Harry that sort of helped determine the vote. But then when it swapped over to the champions and he had the majority, he was doing things like, you know, openly saying, I'm going to make a coin flip between Luke and David. And then when his allies turned on him, he then tried to go to David to ingratiate himself to them. Like, he showed to everyone that he was willing to essentially, like, sell them out in a minute if it meant protecting himself at the end of the day. It should be noted he holds the record for most votes cast against someone in a single tribal council in Australian Survivor history, because he went out unanimously at the merge with 11 votes. Again, that just shows how unified everyone was and the reputation he had built up to that point. I am excited with his intentionality to come in here, right? This idea of, like, just going to keep my head low, keep my visor low, going to have be honest, going to have more fun. I was a little surprised when Kate said he was an introvert, because, again, we didn't see that at all. And one of the things I do like about returning seasons is seeing different versions of a person. I don't want to see Andy 2.0 be the exact same person Andy 1.0 is. And so I do have confidence that I think, you know, he has the wherewithal and the years to be able to process what he did wrong, at least initially in this first stage of the game, to be more low key, not have to concoct crazy schemes, just stick to catching the Roadrunner. That, due to his brilliance at throwing things, will get him into the post-merge. Maybe then, once he gets past the position that he finished, I think then is when things are going to start to unravel a little bit. He's going to lose the plot. That old Andy is going to come back, and he's going to get voted out.
I think he has such an uphill battle. Like, I think a really good example of what his strategy was that he went to Luke and Dave with his plan right before Tribal Council, because he basically wanted to manipulate them into doing what he wanted without, like, the social relationships to do it, but just based on, like, timing and catching people out, which is something I guess, like, Tony has spoken about, but maybe Tony can carry things better than most people and is a rarity and a unicorn. And then, like, Luke and Dave, like, didn't want to be clearly manipulated to their faces and didn't do it. And then I feel like in the airing, Andy was like, well, why didn't they do it? It was like, well, they didn't want to be manipulated, Andy. You knew that you were manipulating them. So I think that if he's aware of the fact that that happened and he says that this time he wants to, like, adapt his strategy based on others, I like that, because I think last time he had a set thing of what he wanted to do and everyone kind of had to bend to that rather than him looking around him and working within that in an adaptive way. So if he's aware of that, it's good for him. Still think uphill battle. We'll still say pre-merge. I think he's a blood because he has no chill. I can't say that he's a water.
Apparently you can't chill blood. That's very true. You can't boil water and you can't chill blood.
Yeah, there's no hot water.
I usually actually push against the people in the preseason. I know that you say it's just people saying words, but the ones who come in are saying, like, I have no strategy. Because unless you are someone who that is part of who you are, and maybe we'll get to that with someone in a little bit, that feels just like an inherent misstep in Survivor. Like, when you come into Survivor, it's about taking personality traits from yourself and adapting it to the game. I think even if you just plan that much, that is totally fine. I think the exercise of going in and being like, the game is so fluid that I'm just going to go with the flow, I don't know. I just never liked that idea. But I think there are exceptions where, like you said, Andy's saying he's coming in with no strategy, because the last time he came in with such a planned out strategy, to the point where he had come into the merge saying, oh, I had this name already planned out. I know what I was going to do. It's going to be Soli Bula. If this is just an intention to swing in the complete opposite direction, then I appreciate that more than someone who just says, yeah, I don't know, I'll feel it out once I get there.
Yeah, so we said he might be here for Kate, and he's pretty much saying he's here for Kate, heard of the experience, and the producers might have thought similarly because of, like, the fun superfan sibling thing. She's a stay-at-home mom of three. She's a big fan, as I've said. She seems really fun. She did call Andy a hermit crab and said he lacked the social game last time. I'm like, Andy seemed mad when I was saying it on the podcast, but, you know, I guess, like, when you're a sibling, you can say what you want. She says she'll be very social and adaptive. She's the one who pushed Andy to apply. Like, you can see that superfan story really clearly. I really do like her. I like the side that she might bring out of Andy. I don't have the highest of hopes because I just feel like she is this, like, stay-at-home mom. I feel like people might judge a book by its cover. I can't really say that I feel like an archetype like that is someone I would say would go post-merge, but I hope that she does. And I think that she is a water.
Yeah, I would say so as well. She says she's a little bloody, right, when she talked about, you know, in my day-to-day life as a mom, right, like, I manage the PTA. You don't know about the drama and the politics behind
yeah,
that.
No, I do. I follow a lot of mommy bloggers. I know exactly what's going on. I watch people give birth, okay, Kate? I know what's going on.
Well, that is a good point, though. Is she in a tribe with KJ or Sophie? She's not going to be on a tribe on one of them, so that could
she's
be something
in a tribe with Sophie.
Yeah, so she could be like, oh, yeah, I saw your live birth. Like, oh, yeah, I'm a mom, too. That could be interesting to connect with.
My God, I saw your birth. Imagine coming up to someone in a tribe saying that.
And imagine, like, someone also unhinged. Approaching Sandra at the same time, right? Being like, oh, you're the queen of Survivor. Like, oh, my God, Sophie, I saw your birth.
I've seen so much of both of you in different ways.
In very different ways, yeah. Halves of you in a manner of speaking. Yeah, so I would really agree.
Of Sandra's giant head, and then, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I would really like to see Kate go far because I really like her personality. I think, like KJ, more like Mel, I really like, she has a lot of bubbliness and positivity to her. When she describes herself as the extrovert compared to Andy, again, that's really interesting considering the Andy that we saw in Confessionals in 2019. And she has, I think, a right mindset for the game, right? She says she's leaving her morals and emotions at the door, that she's more so, you know, taking this as a opportunity to be like, I'm away from the kids. I love this game. I really like being out in my environment. Let me go celebrate. But I have no idea how she'll fare when it comes to Survivor proper, you know, especially separated from someone like Andy, who I think she can feel comfortable with, confide with. Not to say she won't do well on her own, but honestly, this could really go either way, where it's almost like someone like Kara for me, where Kara last season, I did not necessarily have high hopes for her with the whole empath thing. She ends up making Final Four.
Vote herself out earlier in the game.
That's a matter for a different day. But that could happen with Kate as well, where, like, she's able to make some key connections with someone like Sophie, for instance, make her way into the post-merge, and then from there do pretty well.
Wait, just with
game.
Sophie, because she might have seen her birth based on nothing? Is that what
they're both mothers, though. Like, that's something to connect over, I would say.
I guess.
Especially, I think, compared to other people on their tribe. Sandra's actually on there, too. And Sam, actually. We can get a mommy squad going on the Blood Tribe.
Yeah, it's true. And then I'll have to follow them all, and then I'm right back in it, Mike. I'm trying to get out of the mommy blogosphere.
Just when you think you're out, they pull you right back in. Logs are thicker than water. I would love to acknowledge it. Thank you. I would love to see Kate go far, but I don't know. I could see a couple things go wrong her way, especially being separated from Andy, and she ends up going out pre-merge. So
I feel like Andy needs her more than she needs Andy.
I just think Andy has the experience and the ability to like help her through, where she is a big fan, but I wonder, like, having someone who knows the land, in a manner of speaking, is certainly valuable out there. That's why I do think the returning players will be valued from that perspective as well, when it comes to simple things like building shelter, making fire, etc. So I'm gonna, you know what? I'm gonna manifest something positive. I'll have her making post-merge. I know my numbers will be out of balance at the end of the day, but I want to see her make post-merge. I think she'll squeak through, and then from then, I think she'll be like a surprisingly positive big force in the game.
I was gonna say no one is tracking this, but I feel like Rob's fact checker might be. So yeah, when our numbers are totally out, because I didn't at all calculate how many people I have making the merge. So I'm sorry if that's completely wrong. I feel like compared to someone like KJ in the Two Kates, I think she's like a decade older than KJ, like as a stay-at-home mom of three, which I think they both are. And I think that that makes a difference.
Yeah, that's true as well, that she is on the older side of the cast. But this is a relatively older cast, I would say. Actually, it spans the gamut. We have people in their 20s. We have some in their 30s. We have, you know, Crux, 41, Chrissy's 42, David, which we'll get to, is at 51. So I don't know. Hopefully this means as well that we won't have as much, not ageism, but certainly otherism, right, of people sticking out like a sore thumb. Like you said, four moms on the Blood Tribe.
The mommy squad. I can't go back to that life, but yet here I am. Well, let's talk about Shayelle and Ben, because I feel very strongly about Shayelle. I feel like she is strong and smart. She, like, really strong, like, clips of her, like, walking on her hands, like proper injured. Like,
yeah, we should mention that. She's a part-time yoga teacher in addition to a biomedical student. Yes. So she's got that brains and brawn all in one.
Exactly. And I love that. And I feel like she said she was going to kind of keep the science thing on the down low, which is probably unnecessary. But I think in general, she might be underestimated on her smarts, because she will be that like physical yogi, which is a side of her. It's kind of like the Inesu thing. Like, it's a big part of you, but then there's this whole other side that people might not know. She wants to use Ben as a shield, which is smart and makes a lot of sense. She also seems like she has a really good, calm, positive energy. I feel like definitely a water, being a yogi. I just feel like she has a really good energy for the game, possibly has a lot of skills, is maybe a bit too threatening in her clear strength. But if she gets to that part of the game, I think she'll just dominate in all the endurance challenges. She says she can be emotional, but I just see that calm water side of her. She's an influencer with 50,000 followers, so she must have got paid around like $45,000 to be on the show. Oh no, that's not the math of that. It would be about, what's the math? So if he has 265, someone do the math of it. She got tens of thousands of dollars to be here, clearly.
Yeah, a dollar for every follower, exactly, I believe, was the contract they signed.
Pretty much. So yeah, I think that, yeah, it probably would be around 40K, just slightly under the math. Anyway, it's a good conversion rate. I feel very, very strongly about her doing well.
I agree as well. We really, I think, in the same pool, and speaking of water, in terms of like who we think is going to do particularly well. Yeah, I think Shayelle really has it all. You know, I think it helps that she does have this meat shield, this partner who I think does stick out more for many reasons, that should they play together, he would get targeted above her. I think being able to have sort of both sides of the brain, not to say that yoga and medicine are necessarily two halves of the brain, but being able to have this analytical, critical, logical side, but also I think more of the spiritual, almost essence-based heart side as well. We talked about this with Inesu, right? Coming from a doctor, turning into a yogi, that was a lethal combination for her, made her one of the strongest forces. And I don't see why it won't be a lethal combination here as well, between her balance and agility being a good part of the challenges, between, you know, being able to work across so many different fields as well. I can't imagine the Venn diagram of people who she finds in a lab versus finds in a yoga studio as well. She does admit she struggles to not get caught up in her emotions sometimes. So maybe we'll have some outbursts or some breakdowns from Shayelle. But in general, I think she has a lot of good boxes to tick when it comes to what we look for in particularly a good Australian Survivor winner.
I feel like just aesthetically, physically, I feel like she and Ben are very much like they're on the opposite tribe to Sam and Mark, like the inverse. And I feel like Sam and Shay are like, if it's not people going up against their loved ones, like they're the clear people who should be going up against each other, these like two very, very strong women. Ben and Mark are both these like huge guys. Ben is 6'4". He's a photographer and tradie. So he's, you know, physical in his job as well as a tradie.
What is a tradie?
Oh, you don't know what a tradie is?
Well, no, actually, maybe like this is like slashy. You have to teach me all the E's.
A tradie is someone who like does a trade. So they're either like an electrician or a plumber or like someone who,
tradesman. Okay.
Yeah, tradesman. Yeah. So tradie. Okay, it's very hot in Australia. We shorten all our words.
Yeah, it's just cute dad and E at the end. I like it. It's like a nickname almost. Self-appointed like Australian Aussie. Nickname.
Yeah. No, okay. Yeah. So that's how we.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, you get it. I'm like Johnny, so just educating you on Australia.
Yeah, I love this. And so Ben actually looks like he's more well suited for Tough as Nails, maybe, than Survivor.
Really? I feel he like does... he's well suited to Survivor. Like, I feel like he'll be like a massive physical asset.
Yeah, well, he's going to be, I think he's going to be very Heath-like in that regard, right? Like, big, tall, probably able to just like lift people up over his head, covered in tattoos. We saw a lot of Ben. I think we saw a little bit of like Ben's, you know, V lines going down to that special area that you usually have to access the sensitive content on the Instagram, if you know what I'm talking about, see what Ben was talking about.
Absolutely don't know what you're talking about. I just follow mummy bloggers, okay? So yeah.
Yeah, no daddy tattoos for Ben. But I think Shale's beating out Ben here, especially because he says that Shale's more tactical and he's more reactionary. I think we could see Ben be a little more hot-headed, or at least be a little more impetuous, especially he calls Shale his safety blanket. I think separated from her, I could see a situation where maybe he does end up putting himself in hot water, even if you don't believe that is a thing that exists for the course of this exercise, for perhaps, you know, putting a spotlight on himself despite being an asset. I'll say they'll both make post-merge, but I think Shale outlasts Ben.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, he seems like he's there to play. He says he like wants to be charming and stab people in the back. He seems very, very protective of Shale, but then also says he would blindside her. I wasn't 100% sure about that. But I think just physically, like, people will see him coming. He's an obvious big threat. I could see him falling around the middle game, but I do think that he's an asset. But yeah, I would say she was a water. He seems a bit like a blood to me. Like, maybe they are just kind of this calm water couple, but I feel like he has that, like, a little bit of a bite and that killer instinct that makes him a blood to me.
I think he's the water with the blood aftertaste. Like, you take a sip and you're like, oh, something's wrong with that. Like, did some copper get into it? No, that's the taste of blood. And it got you, it's too late before you even realize it.
You can't sit on the fence of blood and water. People can only be one thing.
You know, it's either water, blood, or water with a blood taste. We established this.
God, that sounds like a nightmare. Unless you're a vampire, in which case it's a dream. Anyway.
Oh, it's a dream come true.
Yeah, so that's Shay and Ben. Khan, let's talk about Khan, because he is...
Khan!
Is that a reference?
Yes, that is a Star Trek reference.
Mike, I don't know. Keep it to the Simpsons references so I understand
You never heard the infamous Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, William Shatner going, Khan!
If I heard of it, why would I be asking about it continuously?
I don't know. Pop culture is a pit. You know, sometimes you don't know how deep your mind is when you dig into it. But yes, Khan is a character played by Ricardo Montalban, one of the greatest Star Trek villains of all time.
I teach you what tradies are. You teach me that thing that you just said. Just a lot of give and take in this relationship. But Khan is pretty famous. He has 167,000 Instagram followers.
He's getting a fat paycheck from this
he's
one.
He's getting like $140,000. It's good. Australia Survivor has so much money to just throw around. I really feel like it's just in a really good financial place.
Before we know it, it's just going to be like 10 days because they're going to be like, oh, we paid too many influencers.
Yeah,
we're bleeding money at this point. We're watering money.
Yeah, exactly. So he was on MasterChef, which is on the same network. I feel like Channel 10 really likes to share it around, as evidenced by the fact that Lockie was The Bachelor. So random. I can't believe Lockie and Irene are on here. That would like really have worked out well, I think. Imagine if Lockie was the first 3-time Australian Survivor player because that worked out so well.
That would be wild, of all the players, for it to be Lockie.
Yeah.
And it's because like he's a hunk. That's the only reason.
It's because they randomly made him The Bachelor, which was so random in and of itself. And he's still together with the person he chose. And like, it's on the same network. And it would make a lot of sense to give them. He's going to be on SAS Australia, I think. So like, maybe they did ask him and he couldn't do it because he was filming something else, which looks terrifying. Lockie is actually playing in his fourth reality show in the last 4 years. That's insane.
Is Lockie the Boston Rob of Australian Survivor and we didn't realize it?
But like, Lockie? He's like network hopping everywhere. Like, he's played in more than Luke, more than Dave. Like, Lockie is doing a lot. Anyway, crazy that he's not on the show. But yeah, so Khan was on MasterChef, I think, a couple of times. He seems to be like really well liked. Just like a really likable personality. So yeah, he is pretty famous. He says he's a big fan. I heard a couple of fun things from his bio. So his fear is not making it to tribal council. I thought, that's specific. Like, the odds of that are so low.
I want to make sure. I think Chrissy said the same. No, it was Sophie, right? Like, oh, my favorite thing to experience is the feeling of the paper at Tribal Council. Which
you can make that yourself. You just need some tea, and you can just, so you just, it's not that hard.
I don't know. I was able to visit a Tribal Council site and touch the paper. It's a cool thing to check off the bucket list.
LaRue sent me some paper, and it was fine. Thank you, LaRue.
Yeah, I can understand, but it's certainly a thing if you haven't experienced that before. I will say Khan, from a character perspective, was a standout for me. I'm really excited to watch Khan. And from that perspective, I really do hope he gets far. It seems like he does know the game, but I think he knows reality TV, probably one of the most, the most experienced reality TV veterans out of them all. So I think he's going to make great TV.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a fantastic go-to confessional person, right? It's going to be him and Sandra, I think, are the two biggest reality TV veterans. So, and I think the fact that he is able to, I don't know, it's interesting. I saw one ad where he's like, how great would it be if I cut my sister's throat? But then, like, in his video, he's like, I would cry if I got rid of Amy. So I'm more likely to believe the latter than the former. But I think he's going to be entertaining no matter what. Again, maybe this will be another manifestation. I think he'll make the post-merge. I think being the cook in camp is something that we don't often talk about, but I think is incredibly
valuable.
Don't
talk about it, Mike. Never talk about it. You just never know how people react to you talking about their cooking.
Exactly. if anyone's listening, if any undercover blondes are listening,
I think Khan will be an amazing, amazing cook. So good.
We'll see, though. We saw what happened with Keith Famey.
He'll be great. Don't make Khan.
There's something about Australia, right, where cooks get criticized for their cooking. But I think he's going to be a great personality. I have no idea how he'll do in challenges or how he'll do, when it comes to the strategy of the game. But I know he's there to make big moves and just be a very entertaining personality, and I'm absolutely here for it.
I feel like everyone, because I don't watch MasterChef, but everyone that has been like, oh, Khan's on it, have been like, I really like him. So I feel like he was a fan favorite through a couple of seasons of reality TV already. He says he wants to orchestrate blindsides, find idols, use advantages, and make dumb decisions. He's there to be fun and entertaining, I feel. He says that he and Amy are both social and strategic, but also polar opposites. And he doesn't know how they're friends. So I'm not sure where the disparity is there. I feel like he's a blood, like he's a fiery personality. I think I might think blood is fire.
I think you've really made that relation, considering that, again, you feel like water is cool, and what's the polar opposite of that? It's blood, and now it's fire as well. They're both red. That might also help.
Yep. No, that's exactly what I've done in my mind, but it's too late to change it now. This is duality we're going with. I'm really torn on whether I feel like he'll make the merge, because I feel like he's got the star factor. People like will like him and know him, and they might gravitate to that. He is the essential chef. Does he have like a physical side as well? I'm not sure. I probably will say that he will make the merge. I think he'll be likable.
So I guess I would say that I would imagine that part of his preparations to get on is he knew he had to train. And look, as Chrissy sort of alluded to, a couple of weeks in the gym will not necessarily turn you into Mark overnight. But I think that he knows to put in the work, right? He didn't put it in his bio, but I'm sure he was someone to practice making fire. Hell, he deals with it in his daily life. So I think him and Amy are also two people that have probably done their preparations to do fairly well. Though Amy, I think I'm a little, I don't know. I was a little less high on Amy until I saw her video when she's like boxing for most of it. And she says that, oh, she's the physical person. So I was like, oh, okay. I guess she might be someone that holds her own in these things.
I don't feel like I know that much about Amy from the content, which is ironic because she says she wants to step out of Khan's shadow, but I feel like I know a lot about Khan. Amy is a beautician. I wonder if that kind of girly girl thing might be an issue. Like if they kind of judge a book by its cover and see her as kind of like expendable in the challenges. I could see that, but she seems to know the game very well. She said she's always watched Survivor with Khan. So again, we have like possibly super fan siblings, which is really fun. Wants to play a social game, says she's really patient. So I feel like she's a water type for all of those reasons, but I'm just kind of worried about the archetype and her kind of, and also like the youth, maybe like she's getting fed to the wolves a bit. So I've put her as pre-merge, but that would be kind of sad because we're saying like Khan's going to be this huge character who's going to make the post-merge. And then like, I don't want her to like, to not step out of the shadow, but I'm going to put her as pre-merge.
Something I would put in the category of people saying things for the pre-merge is alliances on Survivor is a big part of surviving. That was one of my favorite quotes from the videos where you're just like, yes.
No, because they obviously ask them, like, what do you think about alliances?
Yeah, but I just love that quote because it's very much like a Peter Dinklage in Avengers Infinity War being like, yes, that's what alliance means. Like, yes, of course, alliances are a part of surviving on Survivor. See, I understand that, you know, there were certainly questions, right, about like, how would you react if your loved one is voted off? How will you be remembered on Survivor? I think this is definitely a case, as you mentioned, of Khan being added on and him being like, well, I want to bring my sister on.
Yeah.
She does say she knows the ins and outs of Survivor, so I don't think she's as completely lost as someone like Chrissy, but I don't have huge aspirations. Chrissy, sorry, but I don't have huge aspirations for her. She is someone who I think could slip through, like, if she is wily enough. Like, we saw someone like Shannon last season who was a bit of a smaller frame, but, like, had that boxing as well and was able to, like, hold her own in the challenges. If she's able to do that, Amy could make it further than I would imagine. But for right now, I think I'd have her going pre-merge as well, and I think she's a water.
Okay, well, in terms of people that you know were chosen and then they brought their loved one, like some really famous guy who was already on the network multiple times, I want to say Jordan. He's a personal trainer, so you know that they asked him, and then he brought a loved one. But yeah, Jordan is a personal trainer and a rugby player. I feel like that's probably pretty good. He says he's a fan who loves Luke and Dave. Okay, can you name other players? Everyone loves Luke and Dave, but that's good. He says he wants to be a team player, social and physical, and like a helper, but not alpha, which I do think is pretty good. So he's playing with his cousin Josh. These are the cousins. Another pair that we've never seen before, but they're like closer than most brothers. And then the duality again is that like the cousin Josh, who was a pilot, is the thinker, and Jordan, the personal trainer slash rugby player, is the social player. So that's like the yin yang that they've put forward. And again, that like duality that a lot.
Whoa! Don't spoil the Merch tribe name, Shannon.
What yin yang?
Yeah, maybe they'll try to copy that from U.S. Survivor as well. Maybe
no, bloody water.
No, Sandra just makes it. She's like, we used yin yang last time. It was fine. Let's just do it again.
No, I think that they should call it water with a bloody aftertaste.
You know, that's the tribe name, yeah. Water with a bloody aftertaste. Well, how would that acronym out? Maybe they could do like WWABA.
Wabba.
Wabba.
Love it. It's done. We have the Wabba. Best ideas today. Like, we should bottle this energy and we should like come up with a startup. I just feel like
Wabba.
Wabba is a great tribe name.
It doesn't matter what it stands for. It may or may not stand for water with a bloody aftertaste.
Is it worse than fire tribe? It is not.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So I guess we'll talk about Jordan first. Jordan, it's tough because I know that Jordy, I said, was our resident Bogan, but I think Jordan has more of the Bogan energy than Jordy. Jordy has the look, but I think Jordan has the energy.
You know, Jordy is a hipster. Jordy's not a Bogan.
That's a very good call.
I'm sorry that Johnny Sue didn't give you the right education, but I actually don't think that that's right. He's a hipster.
Oh no, I don't get tenure anymore. I betrayed you.
Yeah, I don't know that Jordan is a Bogan either. I just feel like he's the one clear personal trainer that we have, and that's good because I mean some people are also I think flashy.
I don't know, but Jordan really has the I'm just here for a fun time motto. He even writes in his bio, it's all fun for us. We won't take anything too seriously, right? He's going to be like, I'm just here for the team. I'm going to motivate the team. So I really do think this is one of those guys that even though you said because he's buff, he's going to, you know, he was the one that was recruited. He really does seem like the sidecar guy. Like it seems like he. No Survivor, he knows Luke and Dave, but at the same time...
He knows Luke and Dave. Well done. You're a fan. You know the two biggest players in the entire franchise.
That's the iceberg meme, right? Like, that's the tip of it, is knowing Luke and Dave. Yeah. But I do think that he doesn't necessarily have this idea of coming in and being like, this is the game that I want to play. So that being said, I do have him making post-merge because I can't see, again, much like John Eastow, is there a reason to get rid of somebody like Jordan? But I do not see him as a big threat whatsoever. I think this guy is going to be a come-with guy for everything strategically.
I totally agree. Like, he's post-merge because he doesn't seem strategically threatening. He seems like a nice enough guy, and he's a personal trainer and rugby coach. Like, yeah, get him in those tackles? Hustles? Huddles? Help me, Mike. Help me, Paul. Help me, Paul.
Help me, Paul. Do you think he'll get along with Croc then? They're on the same tribe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can talk about rugby. They can talk about the tribes.
So we'll have the mom squad and the rug bros.
Yeah, they can talk about running in and with the and then you have the ball and then you pass it. So they can
Shannon,
talk about
you failed the rug bro test. You are not part of that squad.
But I bet I would pass the mommy squad. I don't have kids. What is that?
I see all your births.
Let me talk to you about all of your births individually. I think that he's going to go far because, yeah, physical without being super threatening. I don't think he's necessarily like a winner contender. I could see him going out like late merge, kind of in that seventh spot, and then he kind of gets another go at it for some reason, because that always seems to happen in seven, is that like some bro who doesn't really play and has been kind of purple just gets voted out, but then has another shot to stay in, but then goes again. I think that that's exactly what's going to happen to Jordan. Jordan? Jordan. It is Jordan.
Jordan. Yeah, yeah, Jordan, not Jordy. But let's move on to another J name. So we have Jordy and Jesse, and we have Jordan and Josh.
It's so hot. I feel like they're trying to confuse me. It feels purposeful.
Their families just need to be more creative when it comes to the naming. I think once one kid was born, they say, okay, that letter's off the market. Please choose another letter of the alphabet to start the name with.
Don't confuse a podcaster in 25 years from now if they go on Blood versus Water and they'll be like, what is Blood versus Water? And then time traveling Mike is like, hello, I'm here in 1985. Yeah.
And then my head explodes and then I disappear in the present, because that's what happens now. I've caused my own paradox.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Let's talk Josh here. So Josh is a pilot. He calls himself a survivor armchair expert.
I like that.
He's a survivor professional,
Josh. Get with it.
Yeah, exactly. And which is, hashtag relatable. He did do some preparation, right? He writes about learning fire making and basic knots, which I think is really going to come in handy, particularly when it comes to knots. A lot of those challenges, especially early on, rely on knots. He says what? He'll be good at puzzles, but not at the challenges where you have to hold your arm above your head. How oddly specific.
The challenge where you have to hold your arm. It's not challenges. It's not a multiple.
I mean, Australian Survivor, though, there's the one where it's tethered to the basket. There is the one where you have to hold the ball above your head to a perch. There's the one where you just have to hold on to the perch. There are actually many challenges where you have to hold on to something above your head.
Oh, he's an armchair expert. He knows.
Yeah, exactly. That being said, I don't know. I don't have great feelings for Josh for whatever reason.
Really?
I sort of have Mitch vibes from Josh. Maybe it's because like I'm sort of getting a bit of more like blasé vibes, like I did with Mitch as well as I did with Josh. He says, oh, I can have a deep conversation with anyone. Fine. He didn't leap off the screen to me.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. He also says he's too direct and not capable of keeping his mouth shut. And we have seen many a survivor contestant go early on for doing just that.
He also said he wants to hang back, though, and then help win challenges, make a couple of big moves post-merge, and then ride it to the end, which is pretty much exactly what you should do. So maybe that armchair expertise will come in handy.
Well, he has the game plan, but the question is putting it into, execution. It's also interesting. He said he would not write Jordan's name down until the final five.
I know.
How oddly specific. Did they make a deal?
Yeah. He also says he studied survival stuff and Jordan was focused on getting ripped. So I feel like I really get Jordan. I really understand Jordan. But I noticed from social media that he seems really, really strong as well. Like, he's a boxer and a surfer. He's also an expectant father in May this year.
Oh, congratulations!
Yeah, so there's that going on. I'm trying to work out... why does so much of my podcasting come down to me trying to work out dates of conception? Like, this is not the first time that I've done... Anyway, I'm trying to think if he knew he was having a baby when he went out, okay? It's not weird. I don't know if his wife's going to be streaming the birth. Maybe
or
she
was
should.
Or was there a nice, interesting family visit going on?
I'm trying to think about maids. No, he would have probably known that his wife was pregnant. So that might be a plot point. I think he seems like a nice enough guy. He seems fairly strong. I'm going to say post-merge. It's hard for me to get a sense of these guys being blood and water. I guess they both seem chill and nice enough. Waters, are we giving them? Are they waters?
I think so. I don't really see anything from an alpha perspective that gives away blood to me necessarily. I think these guys are both go with the flow, which is quite literally the concept of water.
So true. All right. Well, let's move on to two pairs I'm very excited to talk about because I have goss. I've got information on both. So let's talk about Alex and Jay. Now, these are the other in-laws we were talking about. So Alex's sister was dating Jay during filming. Mm-hmm. Now that's, you feel like maybe a tenuous connection, but then I try to give the benefit of the doubt because again, Jason and Peter have been brothers, and had it been like 5 years ago and Peter and I were just dating, I still feel like they were brothers. It's been obvious Peter and I would always be together. Like it was family, like it was done, I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but I'm not sure Alex and Jay fit into that. And here's the fun thing, that the woman at the center of this is Sam Frost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's meaningless to you because you don't know who Sam Frost is.
No, sounds like the name of a winter-based character that will show up in the upcoming Frozen 3.
Maybe, but okay, a history lesson on who Sam Frost is. This is like the Get My John Ito voice to give you a little bit of Australian pop culture knowledge. But so Sam Frost was on season 2 of The Bachelor, and season 2 of The Bachelor was like, it was just like a pop cultural phenomenon. Like there were recaps that were huge. It was a moment in time. She won. She was proposed to, which is very rare. I think the only time that that's happened in like Bachelor/Bachelorette proper in Australia, always happens in the US, never happens here. They got engaged. Very, very happy. Everyone loves Sam Frost. The day after it aired, statement comes out. They've broken up. Everyone's like really mad on Sam Frost's behalf. The Bachelor, Blake Garvey, ended up getting together with the person who came third, was saying that producers were pushing him to be with Sam Frost because everyone loves her. She went on to become the Bachelorette. She was pretty much Australia's sweetheart. Ended up with a guy. They ended up breaking up clearly because that's not the guy that's on Survivor. But people just love Sam Frost. She went on to be like really famous. She has, I think, almost 600,000 Instagram followers. So like she'd be making, they couldn't afford her basically. That's why they had to get her random brother and boyfriend, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So Beloved is on, Home and Away, which is like a big show here. Big, maybe is a strong word. It's a show here that she's on. She's like famous. Then recently she came out with like a strong anti-vax thing.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that Australia sweetheart thing, I think, has dissipated quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
She dated Jay, from what I understand, not for a long time. So I'm not sure how close Alex and Jay could be. I looked at his social media, did a quick scroll, didn't find any photos of her. I think I heard, again, like, I don't know if I'm giving credence again to the same kind of outlets that I'm saying is wrong about the payment rumors, but like, I think he said he broke up with her because he didn't agree with the anti-vax stuff, which was interesting. And they broke up since this filmed. So like how close were Alex and Jay? Like their relationship at this current time is brother and boyfriend and ex-boyfriend of Sam Frost. Like this is the most
right
random thing you've ever heard.
But it wasn't even in-laws either, right? Like how do you define this? Like their relationship previously was he's dating my sister.
And won't be dating for much longer. Sister. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, how does that?
But my sister is Sam Frost. I don't think you would understand because I'm just like, okay, yeah, Alex and Jay doing my like preseason research, and then I feel like Sam Frost is the woman in the like that is what? Okay, the Australians are very much on board with me, like what? And the Americans are like who? But I'm telling you, it's a big deal.
Wow. So yeah, so odd to have. I think that's the first time that a blood versus water relationship. I mean,
it's
I guess
just
besides
two guys
Tyson,
who kind of know each other. Yeah.
Yeah, but it has like the relationship has changed from filming to yeah. airing. That is a first. Wow. Wow. The more I think about it, that is truly unprecedented. Oh my God.
I mean, we've had like couples who went on who have subsequently broken up like after airing, but you would think in like the 3 months that a relationship that's at the center of a blood versus water connection could kind of stick with it. Although who expected Sam Frost to come out with such a strong anti-vax sentiment, and who asked her to do that? And why did she do that? Questions abound for me about Sam Frost, but basically, and also like Alex, like the idea that I got from him, like I looked at his social media. He has lots of photos with his sister, Sam Frost.
How many times do you think Sam Frost's name is going to be mentioned? Or actually, will it be mentioned considering the controversy?
I wouldn't. Also, it wasn't like even in the preseason material. Like, why did I have to read this in an article? I was so confused because Alex as well, like, really didn't come across to me as what I would have expected Sam Frost's brother to come across. Jay came across as what I would think Sam Frost's boyfriend is. So, like, so this is the real duality. So Alex is like a fan, a gamer. He's like the strategic. Jay's the physical. Like Jay's the one who does push-ups, but Alex is the one who's like happy to lie and make moves. Like I thought they might make him the villain. He wants to like kind of be the snake type more than kind of anyone else that I saw. And then Jay is a drummer who also is like, he's not even famous. He has like 15,000 Instagram followers. He probably only got paid like $10,000 to be here. He was just like this, like, maybe like a bit of a Jay type from US Survivor, but like less kind of crazy and out there. Just like a chill guy who's a drummer, who's like super physical. Like they seem like polar opposites, but they're connected by Sam Frost. I'm just like, someone needs to help me out with.
Yeah. And they're no longer connected by Sam Frost as well. Like that has frozen over in a manner of speaking.
They will never speak again. in their lives. I think that this is just, they have this connection through the show, and then they will be strangers.
Wow. Yeah, and in an entire season that the concept is, like, you have this one person, who are you connected to? Everyone else is a stranger. They've essentially become strangers again.
I'm trying to wonder, like, how, like, because it's like, okay, so you know that they chose this person, you brought along this person. I feel like they must have started at Sam Frost. And then maybe we're going to have Sam Frost and her brother, and then maybe Sam Frost and her boyfriend. But then Sam Frost couldn't do it. Now they have her brother and her boyfriend. What is happening here?
Yeah, she dropped out the last second. They're like, okay, well, I guess it's the two of you guys. They're like, what? Okay. It's like very much the makings of a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you know, sketchy situation.
It's crazy to me. So Alex says he would spend the money on limo, champagne, and money showers, then invest it as well as donate to a local charity. What is a money shower? Like a literal money a shower of money?
Yeah, or it could be one of those boots that you get in, right, that blasts money at you.
Oh, that's fun. I see that.
So I don't know. That doesn't feel very aspirational. I feel like I could do that at, I don't know, a children's zoo.
What? A zoo? A children's zoo?
Yeah, I've
zoo
seen
a
money.
For
I've
children.
Seen, I've you know, a zoo for children.
What?
Are there not petting zoos? Zoos for children?
I thought you meant a zoo where, like, the children are the animals.
Oh my god, Shannon!
I was like, oh god, no wonder people want to vote Americans out.
Child slavery? No!
That's what it sounds like.
Draw the line at vampires and live births.
Okay, so you meant a zoo for children. I thought you meant a zoo of children. And this is how things
no,
get lost
yeah.
in translation.
Oh yeah, the money showers really exist with all the decrepit people that go see little kids imprisoned.
But wait, there's money showers out of petting zoo? I also feel like that's just weird, but less weird than the thing I thought.
No, I guess I was more so thinking about, like, I don't know why my mind went to that. It should be more so like Japanese game show, you know, where one of the games is like stand in a booth and catch as much money as possible.
I think it's hard to be in a money shower. I don't think I ever will be. I think that is something that a rich person would have to spend money on. Like, I don't think that's something I'll ever come across in my lifetime. If I do, I won't send you shoes.
But this is really the Alex J stuff is the true, like, brains versus broad in a manner speaking, right? Like, they really say that Alex certainly is not a slouch, but he really is the strategizer. He's a gamer. We know. We saw him walk in an arcade.
Yeah.
He said Survivor is the ultimate video game, which I have several questions about.
Wait, I think I understood now the genesis. Maybe they were alternates for Brains and Brawn. Subsequently, in that time, Jay started dating Sam Frost, and then there was a connection. Maybe they met each other in casting, and then he was like, oh, maybe you're like my sister, she's Sam Frost. And then he thought, oh, Sam Frost, I don't know if she's an anti-vaxxer or not.
Oh, that's, you think that's a direct quote? You're like my sister, she's Sam Frost.
Can't believe it's that. What? I can't with this. It's just crazy news to me, but maybe that's what happened. Like, but yeah, they are the Brains versus Brawn duality. Jay, like, social and fun loving. He says he can be sneaky and lie, but he wants to be easygoing. Wants to be easygoing and competitive. I feel like he's water. Alex, blood. I feel like he's got, like, the villain thing. He says his strategy is to not have too much strategy. I feel like we're getting a very strong sense of Jay. And my biggest thing is that I'm Sam Frost. I don't know what's going on.
That's wild. Do you think she's going to make any comment about the show?
I think she should stop commenting on things.
I mean, that's going to be like a more mild thing she's going to have to comment on, I think, by comparison.
Well, she'll have to make a comment. It's about her brother.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just her
exes.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing in my, like, because you don't know why this is a big deal, but it's weird. It's a lot.
No, I'm just more like this. I'm more about the changing relationship than I am about the Sam Frost of it all.
Well, that's because you don't understand who Sam Frost is. But Alex, I'm going to say pre-merge. I feel like he's, like, going to be the hardcore gamer that's like, you know, Andy, you met Andy. No, but, like, I think that that's going to be the vibe. But then Jay, I feel like, will be post-merge because he's one of these strong J-named men on this season who's just kind of there and affable and like, why should we vote you out?
Oh,
and you're an
that's
asset.
That's a great point. Could these guys all blur together so that nobody knows which one to vote out?
Yeah, we're just confused between them. Maybe they'll make a J-alliance. I don't know.
Yeah, so I could see Alex game himself out to cause a game over. I could very much see if he comes in with the true attitude that Survivor is like a video game, I could very much honestly see him do what Andy did and like overplay and try to game too much that it becomes very, very obvious and not have the physical facets to back it up. And that makes, much like we talked about before, like, will make Jay even less of a target. He's another person like Jordan, I think, that's not someone you're necessarily gunning for. He did say
and
he
which
is
one
a
is
bit
Jordan?
More. Jay is, he said he is more forward than Alex is, but I don't necessarily get the context from him that he is someone who could also step in it like some of the other people that say they are very forward. So I think Jay is, listen, I think my hot take is I think Jay is going to be our most purple contestant of the season.
All right, well, we have our last pair, and Mike, I've been waiting about 5 hours to give you this information. I'm excited about it.
Oh my goodness. I thought the Sam Frost was the bomb. Was that not the bomb?
No, that was my bomb yesterday. I was like, that was crazy. But I feel like you wouldn't appreciate that. The audience will. You will appreciate this. So we have Brianna. Okay. Right the second time. So she is a presenter, a TV presenter and a roller skater. She seems fun. And she's on with her dad.
What a swap here of like, yeah, I'm a presenter and a roller skater. Just like, what a, you could jig a slot machine and you would not hit two random careers as much as a content producer and a roller skater.
Well, she has like a whole Instagram just for her roller skating. The roller skating, it seems fun. I want to be a roller skater, but I don't have the skills to do it. I feel like that would be extremely fun.
But what are the skills that entail it? Balance?
Yeah, like roller skating skills.
You walk on your tiptoes all the time. You have natural balance.
I actually am, because of that, I actually am pretty good at roller skating and ice skating, but I don't think enough to be like a professional roller skater.
Is she professional?
I mean, she said it. She said roller skater. I doubt it's just a hobby. Yeah. Don't put it in your bio.
I don't know. If it make a social media account as something, I don't know if that makes me a professional.
No, I think it's something that she does. Like, I think she has outfits and stuff. But anyway, it's not about her. It's about David, okay? David is her dad. He's a property developer. He seems like a nice, normal guy. He's a mountain biker. That's physical. That's good. It feels like Brianna, she is the fan. This is her dream, but she's brought along David. That's clearly how this went, because she's like a TV presenter, obviously good on camera, like has the cool profession. Like, I definitely feel like Brianna was approaching David, came along. So David has a normal Instagram where he's like a foodie. He likes craft beer. He's just like this regular guy.
Oh, does that make him a professional beer brewer?
Just because it's his hobby.
Yeah, exactly.
No. But then, and thank you to Alex Wind, who messaged me this just to make sure I would find it. And then I did. And I'm so glad I did, because then he also has a different account, and it's called the_official_juicy_Dave. The fact that I haven't said the words Juicy Dave to you in the last 5 hours is honestly just a testament how much of an adult that I am.
Juicy Dave?
Okay. So his post said, Survivor AU just got juicy. The bio says, the juicy is real. Now, it's an account that he has created clearly for Australian Survivor. There are only posts about Australian Survivor. It's clearly like a moniker he's created for himself, like Dirty Harry or whatever. His thing is Juicy Dave. Like, this is what he's going to try and make happen on the show.
That's not a thing. You know what it is? If we're running the slot machine now on not just occupations, but with adjectives, of course it's Juicy Dave. Yes, Dirty Harry. Of course, that's the name of a movie character that has one of the most infamous quotes of all time. Juicy Dave, exact level of infamy as well. Who can forget the infamous Juicy Dave from the Bible?
There aren't a lot of nicknames left in Survivor. But here's what I find bold about labeling yourself Juicy Dave, creating a social media account where you're called Juicy Dave, and saying juicy in all of your posts, other than, I guess, everything I just said. Here's the bold part, is that, so he's clearly gone on there to be Juicy Dave. That's his Australian Survivor persona.
Stop saying Juicy Dave.
He doesn't know what the show is going to be. Like, the only person who knows if Juicy Dave is going to make an appearance is probably the editors and God. Like, what if he's made this whole Juicy Dave persona, and then he doesn't get a confessional? Like, what if he's in every confessional, like, you know, Juicy Dave makes this move, and then we just never hear about it? So I'm torn. In the 5 hours since discovering Juicy Dave, I've been torn between, like, wanting to know what the frick that is, and, like, really wanting it to be on the show because it seems extremely entertaining, it seems strange in a way that I could respond.
No. I will not rest, Shannon, until I get an ounce, an iota, a millisecond of the syllables Juicy Dave on my screen.
You're wrong.
This is an iconic nickname. It needs to be put out there that someone has the audacity to come onto the show and say, I've got a name for myself. I want everyone to call me this for the rest of my life. Please, Dave is my business name. Refer to me as Juicy Dave.
I was where you were at 5 hours ago, but 4 hours ago, I thought, wouldn't it be so funny if he was trying to make Juicy Dave happen and the editors just didn't let him do it? And it has a social media account and we just never hear about it. And then we're left to wonder in our minds what the hell that was. I feel like that would be almost be funnier. So now I'm torn. Also, for everyone who was waiting to tap out of the podcast at the allowed time for the moment, this was it. This was the thing. If it wasn't clear that Juicy Dave, Juicy.
I
know. Yeah.
I'm going to sip you up. You know what? Wait a minute. Juicy Dave, typical name for a vampire, is it not?
No, Mike.
Going to drink you up, drink it up the blood like juice.
Ironically, I do feel that Juicy Dave is a water. Because he otherwise seems like the most mild-mannered, like, really just like normal
but person. Could this be like a Jekyll Hyde situation?
I'm
could
worried
this be like
that
David,
it is.
David's going to help build the shelter, but then like, oh, watch out. Here comes Juicy Dave limping out from behind the tree. Who are we blindsiding tonight? My daughter must go. Like, he's truly showing his evil side, because when you get Juicy, that's when you get Lucy.
Yeah, well, I mean, when Alex sent
and
it he, to
and
me,
I will guarantee, if and when Juicy Dave makes the air, that is his Real Housewives tagline. When you get Juicy, get Lucy.
It's the juice is worth the squeeze.
Oh, God. Oh, that's even worse. I love it so much.
Okay, because Alex sent it to me without context. It was like, I think you should look into it. And I was like, I think so, too. Thank you for knowing what the work entails. And I thought, I don't know what this is going to be. You know, like, I know that I go to some dark places on Instagram, but like, no matter how many births you've watched, like, clicking on the official Juicy Dave, that concerned me. And now I kind of want to look up who took just Juicy Dave.
Oh, there are several people that took I am Juicy Dave at Dave_Juicy.
Isn't
like
one?
Despite him trying to come in there, trying
but
to make a name
official
for himself. Apparently, if it gets shown, it is interesting.
There's
because
a lot of Juicy Daves on Instagram. None of them seem to be porn.
That's a salacious name. So Brianna does describe her father as a skull crusher. And now I don't like the association with Juicy Dave anymore, because that implies that some sort of, I don't know, bodily liquids are coming out after his skull crushing.
Well, I also thought that was weird because Dave seems really, really regular. And then there was the Juicy Dave thing. And then she described him as a skull crusher. And I just thought, who the hell is Dave?
Wait a minute. So look, we will never be in the position. I'm never putting on purple pants. I'm never going to be in Bryce Isaiah's, you know, famous spot. But he's got to be the freak of the season, right?
No, it's done. It's done. It's good. I mean, what are you talking
like
about?
Farm Guy 69 walked so Juicy Dave could squelch.
Oh, Mike, please, God. Just why? I'm here voluntarily. I'm trying to just do a podcast, but I do
you
agree.
Brought Juicy Dave into my life, Shannon. I don't know what to do with it.
Once
okay?
It was sent to me and I saw it, I had a professional duty. Juicy.
Juicy? You had a professional Juicy. That should be his name, Professional Juicy Dave.
We're survival professionals. He's Professional Juicy Dave.
I'm a Professional Juicy Dave, please. I have a JD. Juicy Dave, that is.
David, we had enough J names. Why did you have to add another one, okay?
J for Juicy Dave.
Is that what it was? Everyone needed to have a J name? What happens? This is like his villain origin story. Right now we have David. By the end of the season, in some capacity, we will have Juicy Dave. And I wish to know how.
That's a very good point. Because if this account is relatively recent, it had to have been created after the season of Australian Survivor.
I'm telling you.
Did he have a Survivor guy-esque experience where he trips out on drinking water? Maybe there's a blood aftertaste and he sees like a man in a leather jacket and beads in his hair. And he's like, hey, man, I'm Juicy Dave. I'm you now. And he just became that.
Something happened and it's either going to be a major plot point or it's going to play out on the background like when Abed delivered that baby. And I'm kind of here for either, because either way, we got Juicy Dave and I want to know what the hell that means, but I don't, because I don't, but I do. And anyway, it's been a really big day for me because of the Juicy Dave stuff.
Would you say that was the juiciest tidbit you got?
Yeah, I mean, to beat the Sam Frost thing, it was a very, very high bar for me. But wow, Juicy Dave came in hot. Brianna, I will say, is a blood. I feel like she seems like quirky. She's willing to be sneaky, bring an energy. I feel like she'll flirt. She wants to connect with everyone. She's a social butterfly. I feel like she has a lot of energy. She'll be more aggressive strategically than Juicy Dave. So I feel like she's a Twitter fave. I feel like she's possible. I mean, this is the loftiest of bars, but like a Shawnee-esque mold, where she refuses to be boring. Like, I feel like she's funky. Sorry for saying spunky. I feel like, who's saying spunky? Did I travel in time? And then Dave, such a water. I think Brianna is pre-merge. I don't know. She's parabolic for me, like very parabolic. But I might say pre-merge is because she's like a loud woman. And David, I would feel, is the pre-merger too, because he's like an older man. He could be expendable. Maybe like doesn't connect as well to like the younger people, although there are people who are older, obviously. But then it's like, well, then when will we have time for Juicy Dave? So I don't know.
Shannon, I'll be honest. You spoke incredibly eloquently, as you usually do.
You were just thinking of Juicy Dave. Minutes. Yeah.
In one ear, I was really trying to listen to it. But all that kept throbbing across my cerebral cortex the entire time was just the words Juicy Dave.
I know, I feel
I
you.
Was thinking, does he wear the butt pants that have Juicy across it?
He
is
does.
That why he goes by Juicy Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Is he good at perhaps making liquids out of fruit? Is that why he decides to be Juicy Dave? Does he share the hot goss? This nickname is one of the most enigmatic things I have discovered in my lifetime in, I would say, at least the past month. And now it's going to keep me up at night. It's my new obsession. It's finding out why and what and how. And truly, who is Juicy Dave? I am a mental block right now. I want to talk about these two.
Yeah.
I can't move past.
That's why I had to leave it to last, because I just felt we couldn't continue with the podcast. Yeah.
Okay, so Brianna is no matter what going to be incredibly entertaining, but a major red flag. In fact, the poll is colored red as
bloody
well.
Flag.
A bloody ass flag. Is her saying her biggest fear is not playing a big enough game. My God, stamp that on the forehead of like every person who has gone in the first four boots of Australian Survivor, right? Like, this is Henry in the form of a roller skater. Gotta make this big move. I think she is going to crash and burn. Mm-hmm. And I will be very excited, not excited to see it. I think she's going to make great TV no matter what. All that being said, the last person I said that about was George, and he finished second. So I think I am destined to be wrong here, but I do think she is someone who, much like Alex, will come out too quick, too early on. She's too excited to play. She's used to moving at a quick speed with roller skates, but some people are just walking. Some people are just pedestrians. And I think she's going to get her wheels removed fairly quickly. As for Juicy Dave, I have higher prospects for Juicy Dave than you do. I think he'll make the merge because I think, you know, he's a project manager at a construction firm. I think that automatically puts him in charge of shelter building. I think that's going to make him a big asset early on. I think as that older member of the tribe, I don't think he's necessarily a huge outcast. Like, he doesn't look out of shape necessarily. It seems like he gets on pretty well. He seems to allude to this hidden side about how they're both ambitious, they're both fierce, that he has this business sense. He really does talk up his daughter, but I think she is much more likely to get herself in a seriously bad situation than he does. I don't see many situations out for gunning for him unless he brings that nickname into the show, in which case I say get rid of the man ASAP.
Yeah, he just says the word and they're like, get out. I could see that.
Yep. Yeah, they say, screw it. That's why we're taking a day off. We had to say Juicy Dave from the show.
We have to recover from what we've just experienced. Go to the hotel that apparently you all sleep in. Yeah, I had to end on Juicy Dave because there's no going up from there. That's the end of our preseason coverage. I want to say that the tribes, I'm going to just read it out, Blood and Water, if you didn't know the names. So on Blood, we have Amy, Sandra, Jesse, Jay, Juicy Dave, Kate, Michelle, Ben, Sophie, Sam, Croc, and Jordan. And then, I'm sorry, like, this is, I know, just look at the cast photo. But Water is Mark, Jordy, KJ, Josh, Andy, Brianna, Chrissy, Mel, Khan, Nina, Shayel, and Alex. So I think looking at that, Blood seems to me, like, very strong. Because, like, the three male, like, double male pairs, I feel like they have the three stronger guys. Like, they've got Jay instead of Alex, they've got Jesse instead of Jordy, and they've got Jordan instead of Josh. Where, like, I feel like, you know, maybe, like, both of those pairs are, like, all of the pairs are strong, but, like, those seem to me to be the stronger pairings. Then they've also got Croc and Ben and Sam. So I feel like they've got consistency, whereas Water have like some standouts like Shael and Mark, but I don't think are as strong across the board. But it seems like fairly even to me. So I just wanted to touch on the tribes.
Yeah. You never know, right? Because we came in, both of us, saying it was going to be a brain decimation last season. And I think due to the challenge construct and just the Brawn tribe in general, it was a bit of a hot mess. So, yeah, Blood definitely looks better on paper, just in general, than Water does. Makes a better color. Mm-hmm. But I do think that if you take these two tribes into a challenge, I think, like you said, the strength combined with like the experience slash puzzle aspects of Sandra as well, I think means they'll probably do better as a chalk pick than Water. But if they also butt heads a lot, which maybe they have some of the more like combative personalities as well, that might mean that they're not necessarily going to be as cohesive as Water, which is also often the case.
You know what they say? Blood is a stronger tribe than Water. That's the famous saying.
That's the famous saying. Exactly. Blood is juicier than Water. Ooh. That's why Dave was on it.
Ooh, I need to end the podcast. So we need to give our winner picks. Mike, I'm sure yours is just the person to say what first.
Juicy
Tim. No one's going to say it on the entire show. I think the editors are cutting it out because what? How will they explain it?
Yeah, so I had a couple in mind here. So I think when we were circulating around the same picks here, Shaden, I had Jordy in mind. I actually had Mark in mind as a possible pick for a returnee. And I also had Shael. At the end of the day, I will sell Shael's by the seashore as my winner pick. Listen, I went with the Nessu last time. I'm just going to keep with that energy and hope that I'm right at least 50% of the time.
Okay, well, my winner pick is Shael, and I'm not copying you because I already said it on Talking Tribal earlier this week. So
okay, so maybe if I don't copy it, then I'll go with Jordy then. Just to
No. You have your own winner pick.
I can change it.
No, why? Not based on me. Like it's meaningless, Mike. Like it's important to back who you think is going to win.
I'll take both. Thank you very much.
No, you won't. We both said Shael, so we both were really strongly about it.
Right, so I get
really
both
strong.
Jordy and Shael.
Mike.
Thank you, Shannon. You're so generous.
If I'm going past the Juicy Dave stuff, you're going to have to make the podcast easier on me.
Can that be my appearance fee as I get two winner picks?
No. Your appearance fee is we got to talk about this madness for the last few hours, and maybe Australian Survivor will take our ideas in the future.
Please cast more vampires. Yes, take our ideas.
Yeah, is that what we were saying?
Yeah, and trips to child zoos.
Child zoos, terrible what you have in America. But I want to say that I feel that the parabolic woman thing, which is how I usually make my winner picks, which is usually that, okay, it's a woman who might go early, but then if she like doesn't go in the early game, she's making it far and probably winning. I do feel that that has shifted recently. Like I had Flick, I've had Abby, who's a professional athlete. I have Shael, who looks so strong. Like I don't really think these people will go in the early game. Like they're exceptionally strong. They make it through to the long game. Then there are like bigger male threats, which is more visible than them. And then they kind of can win that last challenge and win out. That didn't exactly work for Flick, but it was a possibility. So I kind of feel, I'm like shifting a bit from the parabolic women to like just really strong women as a winner pick option. And I feel like Shael just really fits the bill on that. So yeah, if we both pick her as a winner pick, like that's some big shoes to fill. Don't send them to me, but man, she's got some expectations on her.
Yeah. Well, I would say, 1.5 winner picks.
No, stop it. Stop.
Hey, you know what? Actually, thank you, Shannon. Thank you for being so generous to me. I'm actually going to get 24 winner picks, if that's okay.
Yeah. I think you can cut out Juicy Dave. I don't think Juicy Dave is winning. No one named
Nobody
Juicy Dave
cuts
is winning.
Out Juicy Dave, baby.
I'm surprised Dave Jennett hasn't trademarked Juicy Dave. Like, I'm surprised that, like, he hasn't trademarked every Dave for Survivor. Maybe that's why he had to go with Juicy. Maybe everything else was taken.
Oh, I like that. Like going through the Rolodex of like, okay, what domains have been taken? David stole most of them, but he left Juicy Dave behind as sort of like the fat, that he has to chew on, the bone left at the end of the table.
Who would want that as a nickname? Like you have the Golden God, you have the King of the Jungle, Juicy Dave. Like that's not going in the pantheon. Queen of Survivor. Nope, Juicy. Anyway, Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world now that you've given your one winner pick?
Oh, Lord. So much. An Australian Survivor season's worth of content, actually. So, obviously, in terms of reality TV, The Amazing Race is afoot. In fact, it is multiple feet running. That is the concept of the show. So, myself, Rob Cesternino, and Jessica Leese are covering The Amazing Race 33, which obviously had a really interesting season. They shut down filming for 19 months and then recently came back. So that's been a really great time. We do regular recaps as well as occasionally on weekends. We'll do a sort of odds and ends podcast called The Tar Pit. At the time we're talking now, Celebrity Big Brother has released its cast. I am doing exit press for that. And I actually have interviews with the cast that'll probably be up at parade.com by the time you all are listening to this. So check that out. I'm also doing exit press for The Amazing Race. And then over on Post Show Recaps, holy moly, lots of stuff going on there. I am currently covering a rewatch of The X-Files with my wife that is nearing the end. Josh Wickler and I have also started Down the Hatch 2.0, which is a second take on Lost. We already did our rewatch. Now we're sort of looking through the episode rankings that were sent in and sort of ruminating on the podcast process in general. I'm talking The Book of Boba Fett with R. Philly, which had a very interesting episode on the day that we are recording this. Something completely different, for better or for worse, mostly for better. It was a very fun episode. I'm also covering a show on Amazon Prime called The Legend of Vox Machina, which is a fantasy series from the people who did Critical Role, which is an online, very popular Dungeons and Dragons game. And so they adapted it into a fantasy animated series that is super, super fun to talk about. We have a kickoff show already posted on Post Show Recaps. It comes out on Fridays. So I listen to that. We cover those episodes three at a time. Then speaking of fantasy, I'm covering The Witcher with my wife, Angela. We just are finished recording the penultimate episode of season two. We are almost done with that. So a lot of irons in the fire. I mean, blood. You can check out all the stuff that I do over on my Twitter and all social media accounts, though, mostly Twitter, at a Mike Bloom type, later to be changed to at Juicy Mike.
Oh, my God. Do it. Just take the app if you can, in case you want it in the future. You never know what you'll need. You never know where things will go, but you can follow me at Shannon Gates. It will never be at Juicy Shannon. I've never said the word juicy so much. Like, and I don't want to.
I think Dave's intentions are clear now. That's what he wanted. He wanted to get it back into the world, and he has done so successfully, no matter what happens on TV.
The sad thing is that we've had an iconic Australian Survivor player who is the CEO behind a massive, massive juice company. And she wasn't even Juicy Janine.
And her name begins with a J.
And there were so many reasons she could have been Juicy Janine. And she still went with the godmother. And what do you think people will recoil at, Dave? Which one do you think people will recoil at? So,
Do you think he's jockeying for some Janine shares? You know, is this like his own Shark Tank pitch through another season of Australian Survivor?
Maybe he wants to you can just imagine Juicy Dave, like the cutouts of him at Booth. I don't know what he was trying to do, but I guess maybe we'll find out if the editors want to show us. Again, just a bold prediction that the editors are going to do what you want them to do. But I will be here covering Australian Survivor. It does start Monday night, January 31st. So that is just so exciting. Exits, who knows? I'm still waiting to hear from the network what's happening with that. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like there will be an interview with JLP this season because he's on a bit of a tighter schedule. But we have given almost 3 hours of just complete and utter nonsense, Mike. So I feel like we've talked it through. We also had the
Are you not entertained? Yeah. Quote a famous Australian.
I have no more to give. An Australian that would get probably $200,000 anyway, my point is, next week, week one recap, we will have Rob Cicinino on as usual to talk through for week one. Talking Tribal as well. We're doing that with James Matheson, Haley, and George every week. So we'll have recaps, and then we have the preview episode, and then we had like a short 10-minute bonus episode talking through more of the cast where I gave JL as my winner pick before Mike did. Always remember that that happened. So what a fun time we had, Mike. Is fun the word? What's the word?
I think fun's the word. I had fun. Hopefully other people did as well. Like you said, I absolutely adore podcasting with you. Getting to podcast with my best friend is such an incredible thing. Even if we are blood and water, we mix together to produce Wabba. And Wabba Dabba Doo, here we are. I'm so excited to hear you talk about this season. You are one of the foremost experts in all things Survivor, but especially Australian Survivor. Can't wait to check out the Talking Tribal panel. You get true Survivor royalty in George and Haley. I know they are certainly going to have some thoughts about this season. So I am keeping my expectations fairly level, knowing what happened last season, how lucky we got with the cast from the twists. Hopefully things do not derail incredibly much so when it comes to all the twists thrown in. But I tweeted this out, and we talked about it a bit at the end of last season as well, that Australian Survivor has sort of become a certain mindset you have to approach it with of like, just don't think and have fun. It's very much like an action movie where the characters are over the top. The plot can be nonsensical, but it is epic when it really hits. And I'm excited to hopefully have more hits than misses coming up on Australian Survivor Blood versus Water, colon, Juicy Dave.
Yeah, look, this is all we have until Thunder versus Sunshine. It's a theme that maybe doesn't make as much sense as that, but I think we're going to enjoy it. I'm excited about the cast. I really enjoy doing this. Cast is with you, Mike. Obviously, it's such a joy to podcast with you. And just remember, everyone, Wabba is what you want. When you can mix blood and water together, you get that perfect Wabba. And whoever can achieve Wabba, as Haley did, which she mixed brain and brawn, whoever can achieve the state of Wabba, they will be the winner of Australian Survivor, Blood versus and Water.
According to us, it's Shayelle and nobody else.
she is Wabba. So we'll see who will achieve Wabba through the next several weeks of so much content of Australian Survivor. Until then, thank you everyone so much for listening. Mike, thank you. And also other parts, maybe, did you say squelch at a point? Anyway, thank you for being here. I had a great time. Thank you, Scott Fabia, behind the scenes. And we will see you for the week one recap next time.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
20 Swammerhouse.
£1 million.
Million
euro.
Million.
Rubli.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.